Hi, and welcome to episode 54 of the Awesome Comics Podcast, the place where small press comics make one hell of a big noise. I'm your host, Vince Hunt, creator of the Red Mask from Mars and Stalkerville, and joining me to duck and dive in the ring of independent comics this week are writer, artist, She-Ra fan, and creator of the kick-ass superhero webcomic Vanguard, Dan Butcher.
Fuck you. Hello. How dare you, sir.
Oh dear, and the one man dirty dozen Tony Osmond.
Yeah, rumours that I voted for She-Ra because I used to whack it to her are not true, to be fair.
You just liked her hair, didn't you?
I did like her hair, it's like mine. It's like a gold waterfall.
Every time. Do you have a unicorn that you ride?
Yes. What do you mean?
Well, I don't know. What could I possibly mean, Dan?
You saw the elephant that I rode on holiday. I sent you a picture of it.
I know. It was lovely. Yeah. It was all sparkly. Wonderful.
It was. Yeah.
But anyway, we're all about the comic world on this show, as you can tell. And we want to shine a light on as many independent and small press sort of comics and stuff like that as possible. That doesn't just include the comics themselves, though. Can you hear that? Everyone's really shocked, aren't they?
Oh, I thought something happened.
No. Something's happening right now, Tony. Right here, right now.
Doesn't go down if you look at it.
Yeah, it's very true. How do you get the video off? Right now, there are a bunch of independent events out there that are championing the medium of comics and also showing a lot of support to the small press scene. So with that in mind, this week we're going to have our first ever one of the many guests that work behind the scenes and put together a comic convention. We've talked about cons and stuff like that many times on this show if you've listened to us week on week. In fact, there's normally a week doesn't go by without us talking about an event, does it?
No, every week.
It's because we've got a section of the show that is just called events.
You don't do that when I'm not here, I've noticed.
Well, it's just hard work, isn't it, Dan?
Yeah, I'm not keen on that.
Nah. Look, it's hard enough work as it is keeping Dan Butcher in check. Bloody hell, chaos.
I see how it's going to be this week, Vince.
I love you. I love you, Dan. It's the love that dare not speak its name. Anyway, so we want to talk to some of the people that work behind the scenes, those people that organise comic conventions. So this week, we've got one of the brain trusts behind events like Ice Expo and the upcoming Shrewsbury Comic Arts Festival. Cool, that was a mouthful when I tried it just then. So it's our pleasure to welcome Shane Chebsey to the show. Hi, Shane.
Hi, Shane.
Hi, guys. Hi. I was worried there that I was going to be introduced with some sort of strange name like the other guys were. So thank you for having the mercy to just introduce me as Shane Chebsey. That is perfectly adequate.
We don't normally start off by insulting the guests. We have to get there after a while. Yeah. Usually about an hour.
I've got something to look forward to as it goes on then.
And when it comes to my intros, I strive to be perfectly adequate. That's the only time I ever am. Anyway, Shane's with us for the whole of the show, and we'll be talking about the joys and perils of organising these conventions that we all love going to when we want to spend our pocket money on cool shit. I know I spend far too much money. Even when I've got a table at shows, I spend far too much money. And Dan and Tony know that I don't like spending money.
Yeah, not tea.
Oh, let it go. Let it go. Oh, dear God. Anyway, but before we get into all that good joy, what have we been reading, gents? Mr. Esmond.
Yeah, I've read a comic that I think the three of us got sent, haven't we? Very kindly by Stuart McCune.
Yes.
You both got a copy, didn't you?
Yes.
Yep. Monologue, issue two, from Millicent Barnes Comics, which is his own kind of publishing company, I think.
I did get that.
You didn't get number two.
No, we got something else.
It's you. Oh, okay.
Which means that we're very interested in hearing what you have to say, Tony.
Yes, sir. For the first time ever. Yeah. Okay, it's full colour US comic sized format. Firstly, it is absolutely incredibly beautiful, as is all of Stuart's work. It's recently very successfully funded on Kickstarter, and he's got it straight out the gate. You know, he's got the Kickstarter funded. Well, it only seems like a month or two ago at the very most, I think. We were mentioning it on the show.
Yeah, it wasn't that long ago, was it?
Yeah. Stuart, it really is a creator I would put on the rise. Really original. What's that noise?
Don't worry, guys. It was my phone. It wasn't anything organic, I promise.
Already, Shane, your favourite guest so far this year.
I thought he had a kazoo.
Yeah, that's either way.
He was just going to play.
Well,
every
I do,
time.
But it wasn't that. My kazoo is right here, actually. Easy. Just to prove it. There you go. Totally different noise. See?
Oh, fucking, you live in the circus. You live in the circus tent, don't you?
Who told you?
Oh, fuck it. Right, okay. Right, sorry. Back to monologue issue two. It is, the book is like, it's a really hard book to sort of pin down, I'll probably say. It's a bit like the first book where it's called, it's a very dark conspiracy, a sort of mystery thriller. But you also get running along and as part of the narrative and very much part of the whole sort of thing, you get a sort of existential atmospheric indie comic feel to it. It reminded me of like a good sort of 1990s art house movie, you know, an awful lot of atmosphere. He spends a lot of time creating mood. And it's got a very sort of, not sedate, a sort of almost like a creepily slow pace to it. You get like shots of sort of lonely highways. You get an awful lot of sky in some of those shots. It looks beautiful. And repeated images. He uses the sort of repeated image to talk about time and place. Very, very good. There's a page on it that I put on Twitter of a female with her head down, and it's a repeated image within that panel. Looks really, really beautiful. It's all... No, there's no actual word balloons in it. It's all done in a sort of distant, sort of otherworldly narration. And it really does float along. It's got, it's not like a driving, you know, there's going to be a fight, there's a fight, then there's an explosion kind of comic. It's very, but it's got a sort of driving onwards, sort of this sort of creepy pace to it. And it pulls you, but it doesn't, you're not lost. It doesn't lose you. It pulls you along with it. You know, you sort of follow it as it goes along. But throughout it, you're not very sure about what's reality and what isn't. There was a cliffhanger, which I won't ruin for people who should read it, at the end of issue one, where you kind of begin to get a sense of where this female character, the central female character, is. But there is a sense, because of that, of a sort of shifting reality that makes it extremely interesting. And you really do invest in trying to figure out and trying to work out what is happening. Mm. I would put it very close to, like, the closest thing I've seen for a while to an art show in a comic, I suppose. You know, each panel could be a piece. I know everything is art, but it's got the sort of real sort of structured. Is it mise-en-scène? Is that the thing they say in films about the framing of a scene? You know, very much an art sort
of... That's far too highbrow for me. Yeah.
There's some really creepy moments in it. The main character sort of wakes up. I think she's sitting in a chair, and she wakes up, and she can see just out the corner of her eye, a sort of hooded teenager, like a sort of hoodie type kid, standing behind her. And she doesn't really want to look round and see him there. And she can't tell if it's really her brain playing tricks on her, or if it's actually this character or this person in her house. Right. Very, very good. There's one page I still boggles my mind about how he's done it. It's a picture of a face, but interspersed with it vertically are the vines of a tree, and it sort of it wraps its way around the face, but doesn't. They're separated. The vertical stripes of each image are separated and laid upon each other. It's very good. Very sort of interlocking, sort of intermingling imagery. Really, really interesting use of style and format. You know, it's really, really original stuff. You can buy copies of this. Hey,
just a guy. I don't know how to stop that noise. I'm sorry.
You can buy copies at Millicent, MILLICENTBARNES, MillicentBarnes.bigcartel.com. He's got a mailing list, which is really good, and you can see what he's reading, and he talks about the comics and his creation of them at Millicent Barnes Comics. jimbo.com, and he's on Twitter as @Stuart Stuart McCune, which is MCCUNE, and millicentbarnes.tumblr.com is his Tumblr address. So have a look. Thanks again, Stuart. They're absolutely brilliant. We got a pile of comics off him this week, and I'm just blown away to see issue two and monologue. I really, really loved issue one, and this is another step up, I think, in quality. Really, really beautiful stuff. I think it's a three-issue arc, or a three-issue story, certainly. And so it'll be interesting to see where it goes. And he also mentions us in the inside back page, which is really nice of him.
He's also done given a sketch card each.
Yeah. Yes.
Very perceptive. I've got a Robocop. Tony, you got a...
Nexus, the Steve Rude Nexus, yeah.
And Vince, you got...
I got the Thing. MacReady and the Thing.
Did you get...
Cheers, dude.
Or did you get MacReady, or...
I got MacReady, and then there's a bit of a creature behind him.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, that's quite cool. Yeah, thank you very much, Stuart, for that. That was
Really appreciate it.
Very, very kind indeed. And the work's brilliant as well. I absolutely adore the print I got. So.
Yeah, it's a lovely print, which is the female from the story, from Monologue.
Right.
Yeah, you know her, the way I described her head looking downwards? That's
yes.
The repeated image. That is the image within that print that you've got there. Yeah, very beautiful. Yeah. Okay, that's mine, guys. There you go.
Nice. Dan, what about you?
This isn't small press by any means, really. But I guess it does in some way. It's One Punch Man, book one. I'd heard a fair bit about this, but hadn't.
I'm the same. I've heard about One Punch Man. I always thought it was just the other name for you, Dan. But I've heard a lot about this series, but I know nothing about it. So please enlighten me, my friend.
I picked it up in Orbital. I was picking up my pull list and I saw they had the whole range of this on the table. So I was like, oh, what the hell, it's like $6.99. I'll grab the first book and see what it's like. It's fantastic. It's really, really good. I really high praise it. It was an ongoing Japanese webcomic quite a while ago. I think it was started in 2009.
Okay.
Essentially, it just went so massive. Like, at one point, they were getting 7.9 million, million hits. Like,
bloody
the site
hell.
Was going fucking mental.
Yeah.
So, rightly so, a website called Young Jump Webcomics essentially, like, took it on board. And the chap was writing and drawing it. It went under the pseudonym of One. So, that's all we kind of know about him.
Right.
And they got a new chap on board called Yasuki Murata. Wow. Who essentially did the... he redrew it all from scratch from the start, and it's kind of been re-scripted.
Oh, really? Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Oh,
blimey.
So it did have humble beginnings as a webcomic. It actually went on to be adapted for TV, and that started airing in late 2015.
Oh, really? I'd never do that. Okay.
Yeah, so there's a cartoon knocking around out there somewhere. I don't know if you'd be able to get it in over the West, presumably. Certain sites, I'm sure you'd be able to.
I know. There's probably a few people listening to this that are probably screaming right now. This is where you can get it.
Yeah,
all playing their kazoo.
That's my phone screaming.
Yeah, just going yes. I know. Yeah,
we're gonna have to list that as the fourth guest.
Yeah. So, yeah, every time you say something that it pisses it off, it'll make that noise probably.
But yeah, like you say, Vince, I'm sure there's loads of people that listen to this now that have already been there and done this with this comic and know kind of the ins and outs of it. But yeah, we're cracking anyway. It takes place like in a slightly in the future, in a kind of fictional Japanese mega city called City Z or Z. And for some reason, weird monsters keep turning up, wrecking shit, attacking the town, kind of Godzilla-esque, like just like they turn up for some reason. And in the first book, it certainly doesn't cover why. And I think it's Satima, the main character,
right.
Who's he goes under the superhero name One Punch Man, and he's called that because his one punch will destroy or defeat any enemy he sort of encounters or comes along.
Okay.
And you think, well, where's the drama in like the character being able to defeat anything he can in like one strike? But since kind of this character's got this ability, he's really bored and listless, and his heart's not really in it. He can't see much point in doing it anymore because the monster turns up, he comes along, hits it in one punch, and then that's the end of the fight. So you're not sure where the angle's going to be from then on, because the first encounter, he's like, well, where's this going to go then? Because that's massively overpowered. But it kind of goes back to his backstory, and he's like a kind of 9-to-5 salaryman doing like a crappy office job, and he hates that. And this bit cracked me up. He's kind of walking through town after being turned down for another job, and he comes across like this huge lobster monster that seems to be searching for this young boy. And he mentioned he had a cleft chin, and he's going to rip him limb from limb. And he stomps off, and then Satima's obviously looking around for him, and he finds him. And this kid has got like a pair of like buttocks for his chin.
I saw that, yeah.
And he's like, why is that monster after killing you? What did he do? And he says, oh, he was asleep in the park, so I drew nipples on him with a marker. And he's on the train laughing. And then when you flick back a page, you see like the monster when he's ranting, he's got these kind of little whirls where this kid's drawn on his chest.
Once again, I'm unsurprised that there's a lot of mental people out there, aren't there?
Yeah. So essentially he defeats this monster. I won't go into it too much more, but he decided to become like a superhero, and he does an intense training regime for 3 years, which every day he does 100 push-ups, 100 sit-ups, and 100 squat thrusts, and a 10-kilometer run, and he gains these superpowers, and then all his hair falls out.
Right. The old classic story.
Yes, he's completely bald. Yes. And then it's a real kind of like a parody on superhero comics, and he seems to be the only one sort of like not in on the joke. The rest of them like act like they're in a proper superhero comic, a proper manga comic, where they've kind of got these intense rivalries and battles going on. Mm. And he's sort of like just there as kind of ambling through it, and all these characters bowing down to him. There's one where like a kind of a big wolf animal, lion animal, does like a 1,000 moon strike on him, and it's no effect. And he just does consecutive normal punches, and this beast just kind of bursts into like a big sack of meat just exploding. There's like real graphic violence, big laughs. The artwork's absolutely fantastic. I can really see why this is such a big thing. It's really good.
It looks really underground as well from the panels you've sent me.
Yeah, it's kind of it's weird. Like some of the style where they do the kind of the great way they do their like draw motion and speed, they've kind of sometimes added a bit of computer effects on the top, which is like, oh, okay, fair enough. But it's really kind of raw and fast and energetic. Yeah, it's weird. It's one of the things about like manga comics, when you get a close-up of a face and it'd be really nothing there, hardly any detail, especially on this character. And then it would cut to Sankey's punching. It's drawn in almost like photorealistic detail. It's really well done. They're good.
Yeah.
It's contrast.
It's a nice clean line on the work as well, isn't it? It's very sort of, I don't say readable, but it's got a real sort of fresh quality to it.
I presume it's all digital. It must be. But so I'm going to hopefully go and grab the other books at some point.
Yeah, because like a lot of like the, well, not a lot, but I know there's certainly some sort of Eastern comics and stuff that are almost too crazy. You're not quite sure what's going on, you know. It's, you know, especially some of their out there concepts. You know, even the biggest works like Akira and stuff, it's crazy. It is mental. So does this one translate well for like Western audiences?
I think where it's gone through one process of being written as the webcomic, this is me just surmising maybe, that when it's written first off of the webcomic, the guys write, okay, this is the first draft. And as this other company's taken it on board to produce it more professionally, they give it a lot more polish.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So essentially it's been done twice. So it's just all the good stuff, really. Obviously, I can't speak for past one, but it's cracking. Yeah, great.
Oh, cool.
I must say, it sounds like I've always heard the name, but after that, I need to get some of this.
Yeah, definitely get it.
They've got it on the front table at Orbital, haven't they?
Yeah.
As you go in, they have sort of books, you know, special books or books that you think people might be interested in, and it's on there, isn't it? So
How big is the collection? How much is it going for?
Well, they're £7 a book, and I saw it, there was up to book 12, I think.
So that's
quite
a
lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a lot.
Wow, that's not a bad price as well.
I'll have a look at that.
The way they work them. We're sort of proud of knocking out like one comic a month, and it's like, well, they bring out something the size of a telephone book.
Jesus, one comic a month? Jesus Christ, Dan, not me. Fucking hell. Yeah, it's crazy, their work ethic. So I'm guessing you can just get this from like Amazon or Orbital.
Yeah, it's published by over here in Viz Media, and they do a lot of stuff.
Yeah, they do a lot of stuff, don't they?
Is it the Western way or the Eastern way? Is it front to back or
Eastern,
back to front?
Yeah, go back to front.
I think because I've read so many Western comics, and I read a lot of manga, but when it got, they reversed it, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sometimes that freaks me out a little bit. It sort of confuses my eye a little bit, I think.
I'm the same. Yeah, I'm the same. Yeah. But, I don't know whether we're in a minority. But
probably are, aren't we?
I think if you read, say you read six or seven of these, or you read it on constantly,
yeah,
it wouldn't be really an issue. Yeah. It's just the fact you're swapping from one to the other. It might catch you off guard.
Yeah. That sounds great, though.
Cool. Nice one. Yeah,
really good.
One Punch Man. Brilliant. My choice this week is Doc Dino.
Infamous Doc Dino.
The infamous Doc Dino, number one.
First announced on the show.
First announced on the show, and then it was like, ha, 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 that's a crazy idea. And then they went and made it. So created by Tom Ward and Chris Welsh for Merrick and, well, Tom, who's done Merrick the Advent Man, Chris Welsh, the creator, writer of Wart, the comic, amongst other things. How do you put into words the magnificent madness of the first issue of Doc Dino? Let's just say that the simple pitch is that it's about the world's greatest surgeon on paper who just so happens to be a T-Rex. You know, that's a drop the mic moment, really, isn't it? that's just one of the slices of like crazy pie that you get with this series. But what I like about it, what the creators have done is actually attempt to create a layered character drama of a story rather than just like, let's just throw everything into a pot. They're working more in the sort of, I don't know, it's part medical drama, part soap opera, you know, so it's not an explosive, like, throw the craziness at a wolf style of story. And I really like that, actually. You know, I know it was definitely, they were going for that sort of soap opera element. Now, that's a crazy idea as it is, so there's no doubt a temptation to go all out into the surreal. I know a lot of people would. I probably would, because I'm cheap and lazy. But they don't do that here. They stop before they get that far. So this is sort of reminiscent of like The Brilliant Deer Editor by Ryan K. Lindsay that I mentioned it before. It's just a world that happens to have a human-sized T-Rex walking about. You know, there's no explanation for it because, you know
you don't need it.
You don't need it. You know, I think too many things are explained these days. You know, it ruins the magic. I don't want to know how Wolverine became Wolverine. I don't know about you.
Yeah. Yeah, it's fine. I don't want to see a fucking another origin of Spider-Man either. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah, I'm done with origins.
Uncle Sam getting killed and him turning into Spider-Man. Had enough of that.
Yeah.
Uncle Sam.
Oh, nice. Uncle Sam.
That's my Uncle
That was
Sam
intentional.
Was it like My Two Dads, but with like Peter Parker?
That's the worst reference ever made.
Yeah, well, you know me.
So far,
the night is young. So Doc Dino, before you go, I just want to say, before you go thinking it's an all ages book, let me stop you right there. For instance, this book starts with a sex scene. It's tastefully rendered and hilarious at the same time. There's
how we like it.
Just how we like it. There seems to be, you know, there's some classy sort of use of censorship going on, as well as sort of focusing on like a tube of something that's just called Dino Saw, which I thought was, I'm guessing it's a lube. That's the first time I've ever said lube on this show, is it? I think.
Might be. Who knows?
I'd be
surprised, though.
I wouldn't be surprised. I forget every show as soon as it's done, so who knows? But that sets the stage for what's to come and lets you know straight away that this isn't like it's not a Sesame Street style comic about a cuddly dinosaur, although he looks quite cute in his own way. And that's because he's been rendered wonderfully by Mac Redwanski. My names are terrible whenever I try saying them. D. Cuniff does the colours, Misha Myers does the letters, and Claire Lenton is the editor. So there's a nice sort of... That's the whole team. I don't want to miss anyone out. Normally I do whenever I do my reads, but I just had to make sure I got that. So back to the story. The Dr. Tyrannosaurus Rexley himself, you can tell just by the names exactly what they're going for here. He's a Lothario, whose ego is almost as big as his self-pity. And I must admit, when reading it, his character is very different to what I thought he was going to be. He's he's funny, he's still hilarious, but he is different. He gets all the attention when it comes to the promo, but I think just as important to this story is Dr. New Money, which is one word, right. But it's clearly new money, isn't it? He's Rexley's best friend from college. Now, at first, you might think he's an arch nemesis figure, but instead, they've made him quite a decent bloke, actually. And in my mind, certainly a better person than Rexley himself. Who throughout the comic acts like a complete dick. He's a prick. Which is, obviously it's a character arc, isn't it? You know, you've got those classic sort of stories. They start off being a dick, and then there's probably a learning that they'll have throughout the whole story. I know Rexley, for instance, loses his medical license. He'll grow as a character as it goes on. And it seems to be a lot about friendship rather than anything else. It sounds a bit soft when I put it like that. But I'm looking forward to seeing how this relationship develops in the second part. Because this was going to be one big story, but they split it into two.
So it's the Kickstarter for both issues, then, is it? Or
they did a Kickstarter for like one sort of mini sort of graphic novel. And they didn't get funded with that, so they took a step back, reevaluated. They broke up the story into two, which means that they added pages, so that they could have a cliffhanger, as it were. And then they kickstarted issue one. And that got successful.
All right, funded. So they're going to kickstart issue two soon, sort of thing. Is that the plan?
Yeah, I would think so. I'm sure that issue two will be melodramatic and cheesy, because that's exactly what they're aiming for. Issue one, because I was quite intrigued, because I knew that they had split up the story, and then Tom said they had to write in a cliffhanger. And it is a great cliffhanger that could easily have been ripped out of one of those cheesy American soap operas that you see. You always see in little clips. On like American shows and stuff. This comic is just enjoyable, good time comics. You know, it doesn't pretend to be anything highbrow. It's just good fun. And I think one of the great things about it is this literally born out of a doodle scribbled on a pizza box. I remember Tom telling us when he was on the show.
Yeah, didn't they say draw a dinosaur?
Yeah.
Pizza box, and they did.
Yeah, and he turned up being a dinosaur surgeon. And they ran with the idea, and that was going to be a two-part comic series, which I think is definitely worth the attention of whatever show you see Tom and Chris at. So if you're one of those people out there who are procrastinating about your idea and are forever tweaking it, and trust me, I myself have done a lot of that in the past. That's why I didn't make any comics for most of my life. This is an example of creators just going for it. But that's not to say this isn't rushed. I'm not saying just rush out whatever you've got, just do a comic of it, because they put a lot of effort into this. You know, even though it was a funny idea, they made sure that effort, time, and they've endeavoured to make it a quality product, which is always the thing you should strive for, I think. Rather than just make comics. I mean, it's great, everyone can make comics, but I think you really have to think about what you're putting out there. And this is a quality product. It's nicely printed. It's very professionally put together. And it's just a brilliant example of how sometimes creators just have to say, screw it and go for it, I think. So, and it also came with a nifty set of wash-on tattoos, which look awesome.
Awesome.
It was something I thought we should do at one point, do some awesome pod tattoos. But who would get that? We'll just have to get real ones instead of
them. Just get real ones, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. If you want to know more about buttock. It... Well, are you going to have me on one buttock and Dan on the other?
Yeah, pervert.
And then whenever you trump, it's like we kiss. Right. Anyway, no, enough about that. Gross. Unbelievable.
A glimpse in the side of the mind of Vince.
You don't want to go there.
My buttocks.
You don't want to go there. You know that scene where Kerry Starling walks into all those cells to see Hannibal Lecter? That's essentially what the inside of my head looks like.
I imagine it'd be like one of those sequences out of Event Horizon.
Oh yeah, Sam Neill naked and covered in jam. Anyway, so if you want to find out more about this comic, go to @DocDino_comic. You can follow Tom @HighbrowTrash and Chris @C_W_Writes. So definitely check it out. And I know they do quite a lot of shows in the year. So if you see them at a table where they'll have Eric, Merrick and Wart, they'll have Doc Dino with them. And definitely pick it up and have a look, because it'll be a laugh. Yeah.
Cool.
And we like a laugh here, don't we?
We do.
It's usually at my expense. But anyway, Shane, what have you been reading this week?
Well, guys, I feel like I'm sort of making the tone a little bit more somber now with my choice of book. And I'm... scrambling through my bookshelves to find something irreverent and silly so that I can talk about it.
Please raise us up, because we lower the bar every week.
Well, I had three books that I was looking at talking about, but I decided to go with the most recent one, which is called The Opportunity. It's a full graphic novel by a chap called Will Volley, who I met at, I think it was London Comic Con. He had a table there with Myriad Editions, and who it's through is the Myriad Editions. And I picked it really because I sat and read it in one sitting. It was one of those books I just couldn't put down. It's a very simple story set in the real world. You know, there's no strange creatures or anything like that. But it's basically a human story about human nature, about greed, and about desperation. Really, that sounds great, doesn't it? I've really cheered everyone up with this one. But it's a really compelling story about a guy called Colin. Yeah, there you go. How much more of a normal name can you get, Colin?
Colin.
Don't know his surname. I don't think it's ever mentioned. But basically, this guy is a salesman. And he's one of these, you know, the guys that you get to your door and you just wish would go away.
Yeah.
And it's from his point of view, really. And he's trying to be promoted, trying to get to the point where he's got his own office because of these guys have sold this story, you know, that, you know, you get to hit the target and you'll have your own office. You'll be your own boss. You'll be able to go on holidays to Barbados and have a Porsche and all this sort of stuff. And he's totally bought into that. And he keeps going and keeps going. His positivity is fatal, you know. It's quite a tragic story, really. And I don't want to give too much away, but I suppose I have. But it just takes you through his downfall. And it's really, really well put together. Excellently written. The art takes me back a little bit to some of the stuff you might have seen in, like, Warrior or something like that. It's black and white art with tones. And really nice sort of fluid inking style. I mean, this could be a crime story. It could be a superhero story. I mean, the artist, you know, Will, it seems really, really versatile. Seems like he could just do just about anything. But he's chosen to tell this really, really human story. And I was very moved by it by the end. I suppose we can all sort of appreciate the point of view, even though we might not have gone through that exact situation, you know, of being a door-to-door salesman. I think sometimes in our lives we've strived for something and it's gone out of our reach, you know. But his desire for success just will not let him see that he's going down the wrong path, and he just keeps going and going, and it's a harrowing read at times, but it's all held together really well by the excellent character writing and the really, really good art. You know, so the figure drawing and the you know, the details in there that a lot of artists fall short on, but this artist does not at all. It's excellent stuff. Okay. I don't know if any of you guys have read the book at all.
I've seen it. I've picked it up and looked at it, and you're right. It does bring back. I'm trying to think who it reminds me of, but yeah, it certainly brings back sort of maybe 90s comics, 80s, you know, UK comics maybe.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely. Yeah.
You could see it appearing in maybe Crisis or something.
When you say 90s comics, you have to be careful when you say that, because unfortunately, that has a bit of a negative connotation.
It does. Which is unfair. Executioner's song, don't they, and stuff like that.
Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, bad rock.
That's the first thing. Someone says to me 90s comics, and I close my eyes, I see a foil embossed issue of Deathlock-ish 19, something like that. But it was a painful time for American comics.
Yeah, there was a few good ones. There weren't that many, but yeah, I know what you mean.
The good stuff that was around then.
I was thinking more of maybe you'd see it in Crisis, the later issues of Crisis, maybe something like that.
Yeah, definitely.
Escape magazine, maybe.
Yeah, you know. Yeah, definitely. Something like that. I mean, the quality of it is really high. And I was just, it was the story more than anything, you know, this character piece, this downfall of this character. I'm really drawn to these stories that about these people that ignore their common sense and just continue podcasts regardless. Like people who run conventions, you know. But I think we do. I share these. I share some of his qualities, I suppose. And I suppose I understand his point of view to a certain extent. And you know, if you want to succeed, you do have to be blinkered to a certain extent to the possibility of failure. Yes, you do have to keep going.
It can't enter your mind, certainly at the start, can it? Because otherwise, you just won't go anywhere. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. So, but his positivity is to the point of absolute insanity, you know. And he's got this team around him of people that he's their boss, you know, and he's trying to get them to hit this target so that he can be the guy who receives, because he's put up against another guy who is also a salesman, who's also been promised the win. And all the time, it goes back to these scenes of these two shadowy characters who are basically conning everybody, you know, they're just con men. His whole life is based on these lies from these guys. And it's really, really harrowing to watch him just go down this path and take his team with him, you know. And one by one, the team drop out, you know. They see the light. They say, wait a minute, I'm not getting paid here. I'm doing this on the promise.
Mm-hmm.
And you see them all go out until the end. There's just like one guy who's almost as unstable as he is, you know, and in the end he even gives up. And it's at the start, one of the opening scenes is this party, you know, where he's just been promoted and everybody's there and he's the man of the hour. It really sort of gets across the atmosphere and the feeling and his sense of achievement, and it's really upbeat. Even at that stage, somehow through the storytelling and through the way in which it's drawn, you have this sense of foreboding, this sense that things aren't going to go quite as well as they should be. Even some of the facial expressions just give away this little bead of sweat on his head. And you think, why has the artist drawn that little bead of sweat? You know, it just gives you this impression that the guy is slightly desperate and that he'll do anything to be successful, you know.
Yeah.
And those little bits of detail in the storytelling, for me, it's what comics is all about, you know. Mm. Being able to convey those little details that maybe other mediums can't or can't so successfully. You know.
I'd never heard of this book, but it sounds really good.
Yeah, I've seen it on tables and stuff. He did. I'm just looking him up. He did. He's been in Negative Burn at Image, isn't he? And he's he did a short story, The Seagull, in that book.
Yeah,
but he's quite a young guy, I think, isn't he? From the looks of it.
Well, I met him. Everyone looks young to me now, but
yeah, mate. Yeah.
But I'd say he's probably only—he can't be more than about 30. I would say,
yeah,
which is young as far as I'm concerned, you know.
Yeah, mate. But, they put out some good books, actually. We talked about—is it The Bad Doctor? We talked about a while ago. We talked to Gareth Brooks occasionally because
Ian Williams.
Yes, that's it. Yeah. And Gareth Brooks put out—is it The Black Project? I think it's going to be called. I think it was called. Which won the Comica thing a few years ago through them. Right. Yeah, no, they're Brighton-based,
yeah,
aren't they?
That's, I know one. Yeah, yeah. They do some good stuff. I mean, one that caught my eye was Becoming Unbecoming, just because of the cover design more than anything, I'll admit.
Right.
The cover is like a girl hanging onto an empty speech balloon, and she's like in the air. It's pulling her up, and I just really like that idea. I thought it was a really nice image.
Yeah, nice. I got For the Love of God, Marie, which is one of their new books to review. I received it the other day, which looks beautiful. It looks incredible. I'm looking forward to
Kate
reading it.
Kate Evans, is that one?
Yeah, yes. That rings a bell. Yeah, I think right.
Yeah, nice. Yeah, very interesting. It's like a square format type thing.
Apologies. Jade Sarson it is.
Is it?
Jade Sarson. If you know Jade from... sort of London scene, you see it occasionally and stuff.
I get confused with another book. I am, yes.
Right.
I'm thinking of something else. Yeah, sorry.
Yeah.
So many books. Yeah.
No, they're an interesting company. But they've been about for a while as well, haven't they?
Yeah. I mean, for quite a long time now. But yeah, I mean, I'm sorry I didn't go on as long as you guys.
No.
Fine.
That's brilliant. I've discovered a couple of books I need to add to my wish list now. So, excellent. Yeah, where can you find that? Can you just find that from their website or good bookshops?
Yeah, I mean they have good distribution. I think you can probably get it in comic shops, bookshops, Amazon. They do have a website, which I think is marriededitions.com.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
Yeah. So you can order it direct, I think. But yeah, it should be available on Amazon as well. So it's quite easy to get. I think it's not very expensive, about £12, something like that.
How many pages is that, would you say? I mean,
it's a fair old page count, about 130.
Oh, wow. Yeah,
129 story pages, I think.
Nice.
Yeah, it's well worth it. It really is worth it. I mean, it'll take you, you know, I don't know, an hour maybe to read it, depending on how fast you read, and it's well worth every penny. It really is. It's a great story.
Cool. Awesome.
Awesome.
So from something that is quite dark and harrowing, let's bring the mood up.
Sorry, guys.
Unbelievable. We're all really depressed now. No, I'm only joking. It's amazing. But for those who don't know, Shrewsbury International Comic Art Festival is just around the corner. And Shane's one of the people behind it all. Now, normally, if it's a comic creator, I would say pitch it to us. But rather than pitch an event, just tell us about the event and what's happening on the day.
Okay. So the event is being put together by myself. I was brought in by a local music festival to do an arts festival for them. And I said, yeah, I can do an arts festival, but I want to do a comic festival. Good Is that man. Okay?
Good man.
Because that's what I know, you know. And they sort of said yes. So, it's the formula. It's very different to any other show, really, because it's outdoors, which is, you know, very different because most conventions are in halls or hotels. And I think just by being in a hotel or a convention center, it limits what you can do to a certain extent. Obviously, being outdoors has its problems, but it enables it to be more of an open event. Now, the great thing about it is, as well, it's a free event. It's free to enter.
Oh, great.
Awesome.
Yeah, which is very different as well, because obviously to run a show, you need to charge to make it pay.
Right.
But we've got the support of the festival, and they are basically putting their money where their mouth is and supporting this inaugural event so that it can be, everyone can have a chance, you know, to go and have a look for nothing. So what we've got there is we've got 21 guests altogether, some real top names.
Yeah.
John Wagner is our local guest of honour because he just lives up the road.
Cool.
And he's been brilliant. He's been helping us, you know, plug it and everything. We've got some people from further afield as well. The legendary Howard Chaykin.
Yeah, I love Chaykin. Brilliant. How did you snag him, if you don't mind me asking?
Well, I know Howard from when we had him for Bix in...
Of course.
That sounds good, doesn't it? We had Howard Chaykin. Oh, yeah. But he wouldn't mind that joke at all, either. But, yeah, he was. I think it was 2008 he was a guest at Bix, so I knew from
that. Yeah, I went to that. Yeah, it's good. Yeah.
And he was a great guest. So entertaining. Just a real gent, a real professional. So I just thought he'd be a really good fit because he's doing this... Marvel Artists Seminar for us at the festival.
Okay.
So it's not just, you know, artists sitting around signing books. There's a lot going on. We've got a full event schedule as well with some top people doing that. Other people coming along from overseas. We've got Joey Cavallari, who's a very well-respected comics editor. He's going to be doing a talk for us. Who else we got coming over? Goran Parlov.
Yeah.
Does
Goran live over here now? Because I know I've seen him at a couple of things.
It seems like he does.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it? Yeah.
He likes the beer, you know?
Right. I think I saw him at Nice a couple of years running. I think he's been at that, hasn't he?
He's a regular. Yeah, he's a regular at Nice. And I've been trying to get him for ice for a while, but obviously because the two shows are close together, it's been difficult. And me and Jeff talk about these things, and I sort of conceded the fact that, you know, he's a Nice man, not a Nice man.
Yeah, he's got dibs in there. So,
yeah, which is cool, you know, we do that. We alternate some guests, we keep others. So, but Goran is a good guy, and he's wanted to do one of my shows for a while. And so I give him a call about Shrewsbury, and he was really up for it. He just liked the idea of coming to a little town, a little rural town, and finding out how good the beer is, basically.
Right, okay. Yeah.
So that, I mean, I'm really happy to have him there because he's a personal favourite artist, you know, of recent years.
Stuff. The Punisher stuff and the Starlight. Stuff. Yeah,
it's great. And the Nick Fury. I mean, that was for me was like.
Yeah, that's my favorite. Oh, I love that series. Yeah, I've got a friend. A friend of Mark Lemming's actually, who's actually a vicar, and he's got a sort of quite a funny guy. He's Australian, and I didn't realise that he was really. I thought Lemming was winding me up that he was a vicar, and I bought him as a present. I bought him a present of the Fury book until I remembered the big prostitute scene in it, and I thought,
it's too late. He's got it now. He's gonna see it.
And he wrote me back and said no, he loved it. And I thought, oh, phew. Yeah, but that's an incredible book. Absolutely incredible. Yeah,
it really is. I mean, I read it in one sitting. I bought all the issues, and just never got around to reading them. You know how it is sometimes. Yeah, you have an issue, you have a series on order.
Yeah,
and you just don't read it. It sits in your box of unread comics, and then I just got it out and read all the issues in one go. It just blew me away. The whole vision of it, it was obviously a complete story from beginning, middle to end that it was planned there, and it just works so well as a character piece and as a comic. You know, just, and then the artwork is just so good. The storytelling is just masterful. He's one of the storytellers.
Yeah, straight out the gate, it's so good, isn't it?
Yeah.
So you've got some old friends of the show on as well, actually. You've got some past guests. So you've got Jessica Martin's doing it.
Yeah, Jess is there,
Leah Moore, she's coming down.
Yeah, Leah's coming. She's going to do something to promote Electric Comics.
Right, yeah, we talked to her about that, yeah. So you've got quite a lineup: Robbie Morrison, John McRae, Barry Kitson's great artist. Love Barry's work.
Barry Kitson, yeah, he's coming along. But, I mean, I've not met Barry in all the years of doing conventions.
Yeah.
He's one of those few people that I've never actually physically... I've spoke to him online, but I've never met him. Yeah. So I'm really looking forward to actually meeting him and getting to know him. That'd be good. Who else have we got coming over? I'm just trying to think. Roland Boschi.
Yep.
From France. Pretty much a regular Marvel artist these days on a lot of the high-profile stuff. So
yeah.
That's a really nice one for the Marvel fans, you know.
Yeah, so in fact, we were talking about the Wolverine he did with Jason Starr last week.
Yeah,
because Jason Starr's over for a festival. He's mostly a crime writer, but does some
well, originally he guest with us. That's probably what it was. Yeah, because I was really excited about getting Jason and Roland over, you know. But unfortunately, due to stuff outside of our control, Jason can't come anymore. But
that's a shame. Yeah.
Yeah, and I have to say, what a lovely guy. I mean, I've only met him online, but all the way through our discussions, you know, one of the most pleasant guys I've had to deal with, you know.
Yeah.
Really nice guy. So hopefully
books. He's had some books out of Hard Case Crime as well, some novels,
noir
books, and they're brilliant. They're so they're so sort of out of order, you know what I mean? They're so sort of rude and violent.
Yeah.
Yeah, really good.
And it never feels like they're that way just for the sake of it.
No, it doesn't, you know? Yeah. Yeah, he's got a real sense of that noir thing, isn't he? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Okay. Really good writer, yeah. So, yeah, I mean, like I say, 21 guests altogether. A lot of people you might see regularly at cons, but quite a few, I think, that don't do that many cons. So, it's great. Oh, we've got Andy Diggle as well.
I was going to ask you about that, Shane. Because there's so many conventions now, aren't there? And there's so many people who seem to be, naming no names, there's some people who seem to do one every weekend. You know, we have a little calendar thing on here where we read out the guests, and I feel like it's like Groundhog Day every time I read out certain people's names, you know.
Yeah.
How do you keep it fresh? How do you, you know, invite guests that no one else is inviting? Because sometimes it's difficult to reach out to them, isn't it? You know?
Yeah, it can be. I mean... I think contacts through contacts is always good. So some of the past guests that I've had have massive contact lists and only too happy to share them. And so I take full advantage of that, you know, and I'll talk to people that maybe other people might not have thought of, you know, somebody whose work I enjoyed 20 years ago, or somebody whose work is merging over here, but isn't really that well known yet.
Yeah.
Another convention organizers might not have actually tapped onto the fact that these guys have got big bases. So I try and stay ahead of the curve there and just invite people sometimes before they're well known, you know, they might not be that well known, but I have sort of faith in the fact that by the time the convention happens, they will be, you know.
Yeah.
Sometimes it backfires, sometimes they're still unknown, but I don't really care because at the end of the day, one of the things about a convention or a festival for me isn't about, it shouldn't be a self-serving thing. You know, it should be about promoting those artists, about promoting those creators and the publishers and all that sort of thing. I think I've always felt as a convention organizer or whatever, that you're performing a service, you know, to the industry.
Yeah.
You shouldn't be self-serving. You should be performing a service. And that service is to promote comics and to promote comic creators. So I'm always very keen.
Yeah, cheers.
It's the only one to have, I think. And I think that, you know, when you approach it like that, it works anyway, because you end up with a better show.
Yeah.
Because you're bringing fresh, new ideas and people into conventions. And yeah, we'll always have the regular guys who are there, because you also need the legacy of what they've achieved over the years, you know, these legends and these British creators who went over to the States and sort of made comics relevant to a bigger audience. I mean, you can't ignore that, you know, you can't wipe it away. I've seen conventions do that, you know, I won't mention any names or anything, but I've seen a certain convention in particular, which was a very well respected convention, turn people away, turn these guys away, you know, because they didn't fit in with what they felt they wanted to represent. But to me, comics is it shouldn't be marginalized like that. I think you need
to invite
everybody who's, you know, it's relevant. Everybody is relevant, whether you work for Marvel or DC, whether you're a small press and everything in between, whether you put out a web comic every week, it doesn't matter, you know, and everybody should get a platform, an equal platform.
There's a lot of people cheering right now. I hope you know that.
what are your feelings on these kind of the conventions that come along nowadays? And essentially, they're just kind of like pop culture cons, and it's more about TV celebrities and stuff like that.
I mean, the actual conventions themselves, I've got no problem with. They obviously serve a huge audience, and they're very well put together, and they're very professional for the most part, apart from a few notable exceptions. But I've got no problem with it. What I have a problem with is the fact that they call themselves comic conventions.
Yeah, that's how we
Because they're not comic conventions. They should call themselves pop culture conventions or cosplay convention or whatever they are. They're certainly not comic conventions.
Some of them have gone that way. We've noticed, even in the last month, I reckon, we've noticed a few that are calling themselves cosplay conventions and stuff, haven't we, guys?
Yeah. I think that's a good move. And I think that is because of the vocal... the vocal group of people, such as yourselves and others, that have actually pointed this out and said, look, you can't call yourself a Comic Con, because you're not. Yeah, San Diego get away with it, because it's San Diego. Because,
plus,
you know, 25...
San Diego.
Exactly.
As much as there is just shit at San Diego, there's also an awful lot of comics you can buy, same as New
York,
you know?
Just shit.
Well, there's shit there.
But yeah, it came from comics. That's the thing about San Diego. They can call themselves what the hell they like, as far as I'm concerned. But when you have an event that is not at all about comics and has the name Comic Convention or Comic Con, I think that's really misleading. And I don't think they should do that. And I think a lot of these organizations have now responded to that feeling and have started to rebrand themselves. And, you know, great. They've reacted. Those that don't react to that, I mean, you know, that's up to them, I guess. That's my feeling on it anyway. We're never going to be able to change the course of, you know, because Comic-Con, as a phrase, is a license to print money for a lot of these guys. They're not going to take away, they're not going to remove that from there. I mean, some of them put it there when it was called something else. You know, it used to be called something else, and then they'll just put Comic-Con on the end. You know, because they know that that word means an extra 30,000 or 40,000 people through the door.
Yeah.
And they're not going to change that.
I mean, if ever the term Comic-Con got a bad connotation, they'd drop it.
Yeah. Of course they would.
It's as simple as that. Whereas the people that actually care about it and believe in it, they'll never change it, because a Comic-Con is exactly what these things are.
And there's so many now as well, aren't there? I mean, I think we first met Shane at Bristol, didn't we? You had a small zone table back then.
Small zone,
you were selling people's comics for them, essentially. Back then there was only one convention, maybe two Bristol. A year, wasn't there? You know.
Yeah, there was Bristol, and then later on there was Bristol and us, when we did Bix, and you know, and that was it, you know.
So what made you what made you lose your mind entirely and decide to organize a comic convention?
I keep asking myself that all the time. but I'm not getting an answer.
And yet you keep coming back every year.
I know. What is the matter with... I don't know what's the matter. I don't know the answer to that question. I think that I just love doing it. It's as simple as that. It really is. I love comics. And I love, to a certain extent, I love the community of people around comics. I mean, there's good and bad. Adding everyone, we all know that. We all know there's some real jerks out there, and but you know, 99% of the people in comics just also happen to be really nice people, really creative people, and just it's just a great community to be a part of, you know. And being a con organizer, you know, you can be part of that community, so that's quite attractive. And I think a lot of organizers probably wouldn't be as honest with you and say that, you know, they do it because they, you know, they love being part of that. But you know, I've got no, you know, qualms about that. It attracts me, you know, being part of that community, meeting people, meeting great artists, great writers, enabling new creators to find a platform. You know, that is the biggest buzz ever. You know, when we do the Comics Uncovered thing in Brum, when you see somebody come in over a couple of years, and then a couple of years after that, you see them, you know, as a major Marvel artist or a major DC artist or something like that.
I've heard a lot of good things about that.
That's nice. That's a nice feeling, you know, that to think that, okay, you haven't put them there. They've put themselves there through their hard work and dedication. You've helped. You've been a cog in the wheel.
Like years ago when I lived in the middle of nowhere and Comic-Cons were few and far between, do you know what I mean? They were like oases in the desert. You know, you would cling on to anything you could get, wasn't it? You know, but now it's just brilliant that there's so many different avenues to get your work out there.
Yeah,
and to have these opportunities, like you say, the Comics Uncovered. Do you know what I mean? That would have blown my mind years ago if something like that was available to me.
That's why I did it, because it's something I always wanted when I wanted to be a comic artist. You know, well, I still do. It's just that I realize now that I'm not good enough. But when I was still trying, if something like that had come along, oh my God, you know, wow. You know, and so now it's here and people can have it. And if you want to be a comic artist, you now have somewhere to go. Every year, and we're developing it, so it's not just once a year. There are going to be things happening where you can get constant support throughout the year. We're working on stuff with artists and writers and publishers, so there's this framework.
We've talked about it, but I don't know if we've specifically said it. For those people out there that don't know what this Comics Uncovered is, that runs alongside ICE, doesn't it, every year?
That's right, it's the day after ICE, yeah.
Yeah, for the basics, what exactly is that?
It is a conference, really, as opposed to being a convention. What we have is a full day of events led by some of the biggest names in comics. People who've taken part include Dave Gibbons, Mike Collins, Joey Cavallari, who's coming to Shrewsbury. He's already done stuff for us. You name it, they've done stuff for us, you know, the big names, the big publishers basically coming over and helping out. And also the other thing is Aftershock, the new publisher Aftershock, are also involved. I really wanted to get involved with them straight from the start because I could see what they were doing, and I thought this is a great opportunity for new artists. And they are so open to talking to artists and writers, and you know, it's really exciting. It really is. So we have all that going on, and then there's one-to-one portfolio reviews as well all through the day with DC Comics, Aftershock, Dark Horse Comics, Titan should be there as well again this year. And I'm always talking to new publishers to try and get them on board as well, hopefully get some European publishers this year. Brilliant. So you just don't get that. You don't. You know, comic conventions, you used to be able to do this at comic conventions, but you can't really anymore. And the ones that do, it's like a long queue, and you might see someone, and they might look at your portfolio, and they'll probably not really follow it up. You know.
Well, I think it's a really good idea to, like, you know, it runs alongside, but it's a different, more focused event, isn't it? Where you know, it's more
Totally focused.
Yeah, and it's more dare I say, the business side, you know, what I mean, behind the scenes, you know, talking to the publishers and stuff, rather than seeing your favourite artist and then taking your portfolio and, like you say, standing in a line. A lot of the people that are there for this thing, you know, they're serious. They want to learn.
Yeah. If you're serious about being a comic artist, then it is probably one of the best opportunities you will ever have. And I'm not just saying that, you know, this is the dream event that I wanted when I was trying to be a comic artist. Mm. So basically what I've done, what would I have needed back in the, you know, early 90s when I was trying to make it as a comic artist? What would I need to have succeed? And basically I've written a list of all those things that I needed and I've provided them to other artists through this event, you know, and through, you know, my experience of trying and failing and all the knockbacks, I've tried to sort of move them to one side so that the artists and the writers can get direct access to the right people instantly. You know, there's no queuing to see anyone. You have a time. You go in. You see your editor. It's all laid out. You know, it's a much more relaxed and enjoyable experience. You don't spend a whole day queuing to see someone for five minutes. You enjoy the rest of the day. You do networking, you go to the bar, you talk to other editors, you talk to artists, you talk to writers. A lot of small presses have said to me that they've enjoyed it because they can talk to writers and artists and they can form ideas. You know, the things that have come out of the event, not just work for hire, but actual creations that have come out of the event, just having so many creative people under one roof with so much beer. It's great, you know. It's a unique event, and I'm really proud of it. It's not entirely my own idea. We did something similar a few years ago, me and James Hodgkins, and we share the idea. I suppose to a certain extent, but it was me that wanted to do it, you know, more than anything, this idea of an event that, because what we do is basically something that is just part of most conventions, but this event is entirely about people getting into comics, you know. It's totally focused, whereas ICE is just fun, you know. ICE is just for people, you know. If you're a fan, you just come and meet your heroes and have a great time. You know, it's a totally different experience.
Spend all your pocket money.
We'll go for it. Yeah, the exhibitors will love you for it, and they might stop. You know, and they might stop moaning at me when they don't take so much.
Well, I mean, isn't it? Like, it was funny that you bring up that, because I know Dan from Leamington Spa. I mean, I don't know whether you agree with this. It's
okay.
I mean, people come through the door. You know, if the exhibitor does. I mean, sometimes you have, like, people have a table and they say, oh, I didn't do well, you know, and it's all fair, you know, they piss and moan about it. Not that anyone does. I'm not talking about any specific. This is hypothetical. but if they piss and moan about it, that doesn't really lie with the exhibit, you know, the person who's putting on the organisation. If it's a really busy convention and you haven't made much money, you can't, I don't think you've got a leg to stand on to blame the organiser if it's been a big turnout.
To a certain extent, I think, even if it's quite quiet, my busiest show money-wise, there was 100 people there, you know, but they all spent 50 quid, so it was fine.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so that's the thing, it's who's there, how dedicated are they, and what are they going to spend? And are they going to spend it on you? Well, if your stuff is good, yeah, they will. And there is a certain level of, yes, it is your responsibility to sell your stuff, but it's also our responsibility to make sure that the environment is suitable so that you can sell your stuff.
I think it's
a shared thing
that plays into the earlier point of, like, if something's labeled as a comic con but people take that as a byword for cosplay, TV, whatever, so the people turning up there might not be inclined to buy comics. I'm not saying that cosplayers don't buy comics or any of those kind of things, but
we don't get in that trouble again, do we?
No.
I remember that one.
They still don't, but they go.
Well, they've got no pockets to carry the money in.
That's how we theorised it, Shane. I agree, mate. Yeah.
I mean, you know, your love is for the comics, you know, that much is true. But also, you're creating an event, so, you know, your job, in a sense, is to get the people through the door, isn't it? What happens when they're through the door? That you know, when they're through the door, you could say, you know, you've done your job, Yeah. So it's now in the hands of the exhibitors and the guests and stuff to just be on their game.
Exactly. Yeah, I think that's the simple answer, I think. I've been an exhibitor. I still am an exhibitor at shows. If I don't do well at show, I don't blame the show. You know, if I turn up, I mean, I used to do Bristol every year, and takings would go up and down, but there was always at least, I don't know, 3,000 people there.
Yeah, that was the thing in Bristol. It was also about comics, so you could buy back issues and walk around and buy comics everywhere, couldn't you, back then? I did the tram shed, and I did the hotel and all sorts,
It was. I mean, it was a great con, you know, I loved Bristol. And but, you know, any convention... I think the organizer does have some responsibility. You know, I would never say it's complete, you know, we have no responsibility for how good the experience is for an exhibitor, because we need to make sure that they're in a good position, that there is nobody in a quiet area. And that happens sometimes. I've been at cons. I know probably lots of people listening to this podcast who are exhibitors have been to cons where they've sat and nobody goes past them because the design of the floor plan hasn't considered the flow of people. And we all make mistakes. I've made them, you know. So we are responsible, I think, for making sure that there's nobody in a corner not being serviced, you know. That sounded wrong. But,
you were obviously at UCAC.
Yeah, good old days where you got serviced by Frank himself. But yeah, you have responsibilities. But as long as you provide that, as long as you provide the footfall, and as long as you provide a clean, safe environment full of fans who are likely to buy your stuff, that's as far as our responsibility goes. If you don't do well in that environment, there's nothing we can do about it. But I do share, you know, I'm a publisher, so I have sympathies, you know, I understand. And we do everything we can, you know, to make sure every exhibitor gets the best possible, you know, service. I need to find another way.
Also on the day, you've got to be switched on and on the go and make sure that everyone's happy and like.
Yeah, don't sit there reading a book or looking at your phone, you know, or looking miserable. A guy at ICE, I think it was last year, wasn't doing too well in the morning. It was a bit quiet, and his position wasn't great. So we moved him to a much more busy position, and we changed the queuing system so he wasn't getting blocked anymore. But he sat there with a face on him all through the con until about halfway through the Saturday. And he just said, "Oh, I'm going now. It's not any good. It's just bloody rubbish, this is." And
I remember him.
Do you remember him? Yeah. And he was really... But anyone walked towards him, you'd be like, "Oh, I'm not buying anything off him. He's going to kill me. Look at his face, you know." And you're not helping yourself by sitting there looking miserable. And another guy fell asleep at his table in 2014, I remember. He came in and he was right by the door. He came into the door... it was a prime spot, you know, the table in front of the door, the first people, you know, and he was asleep at his table. Okay. You know, I could have chucked him out, to be honest. I felt like chucking him out. I really did.
Yeah, that is ruining it.
Because it's not just ruin it for him, it's ruin it for everyone else as well.
Yeah. I was wondering about that as well, Shane, is because dealing with all these guests, because you know, you'll have 20 guests at some convention. It's be like sort of herding cats sometimes, isn't it?
Sometimes. I mean, it's 20 at Shrewsbury and nearly 50 at ICE this year.
Right, wow.
Bloody hell.
Yeah.
I mean, I went to a convention, I won't name it, but I went there, it was a Saturday and a Sunday convention, and I got there at, I think, noon or lunchtime on the Sunday and went up to the floor where all the guests were meant to be, and they'd all gone.
Saturday and a Sunday at lunchtime.
Yeah, on the Sunday lunchtime,
Go to the bar, Yeah.
Well, there was no bar in the building, so we sort of
Screwed.
We searched the local pubs and we couldn't find them.
Even my phone laughed at that. Did you hear? Had a reaction to that one. But yeah, that's what happens. You know, if you don't provide, you know, if there's no bar, they're just going to leave, aren't they? Bars are quite important at comic conventions. I mean, I had to work very hard to try and secure a bar for this one in Shrewsbury. You know, it's so essential. You need it. But yeah, I mean, guests are like, it is like herding cats sometimes, especially, I'm not going to name names because that would be, you know, financial suicide, but there are certain individuals, and I'm sure most people listening to this probably know who they are, who like to go to conventions just to get absolutely hammered and aren't really interested in in the fans, you know. So I don't invite them, you know. I don't invite those sort of guests. It's not because I don't like them as people or anything like that, or I don't want them at my show. I just don't want the show to be about the social aspect only. I want the fans to come and meet the guests and the guests to treat the fans with respect. So the guests that I invite tend to be the more, dare I say it, professional.
Right, let's hope. Yeah.
Yeah, we hope.
But, you know, point out that you've never invited us, and that'll be the reason.
There you go. You see, I'm a self-prophesizing statement.
We were only going to go to get pissed, so now we know that.
Bloody piss heads. We don't want you there. Lowering the tone with your bloody podcast.
So when it comes to getting involved with like these conventions, how important would you say is the, I mean, from a small press and an independent point of view, how important is the conduct of someone who asks for a table and stuff?
Well, it's really important, I think. It's important to us, obviously, because when you're exhibiting at a show, you, to a certain extent, to a very small extent, you are also a public face to that show. So I think it's only fair and professional to conduct yourself in the correct manner. And also for your own benefit, because this is your opportunity to make new contacts, to sell your books to different people. And, you know, if you're not behaving in a professional way, then you have the potential to damage your own brand. I mean, small press creators, I think there are two types of small press creators.
Oh, this could be interesting. Go on.
They're all going to instantly think, well, which one am I? I mean, obviously, there's always people who don't fit into this, but there are basically two types for me. There are the types that want to do it purely for the enjoyment, and there are the types that want to do it as a potential career. If you want it as a potential career or as a side earner or whatever, something, you know, you're looking at it as a serious endeavor, then you have to consider all those things. Really, you know, it goes without saying. If you're doing it for fun, I think some people who are doing it for fun think it's okay to have that sort of punk rock mentality of, well, you know, I'm just going to swear at people at my table and I'm going to act like a dickhead or whatever. But you've got to remember, in a show, you can do that as much as you like. That's cool. If you want to do that in your comics and you want to present that image, that's cool. You know, I love all that sort of stuff as a, you know, a fan. But if you're at a convention, you're not just there on your own. You're there with other people who are trying to make something of it. Perhaps it's a serious event for them. Perhaps that is they're launching a book or whatever. So if you're sat next to them and scaring people away, it's just being courteous, you know.
Who you're next to at conventions is a thing that is talked about an awful lot.
It can make or break you sometimes.
It really can. If you're next to the stall that's doing really well, selling, you know, dodgy prints, or you know, you're next to someone who doesn't give an F, then do you know what I mean? It's like, there's very much.
And it's not fair, is it? So yeah, we do look at that. I mean, just going back to what you just said about selling prints, I put a notice actually on my Facebook page recently, so I think it's for ICE, just establishing the fact that we're really trying to stop that sort of stuff. I've got no problem with, you know, people selling sketches and stuff like that. That's cool.
Not at all.
My opinion is that if it's a one-off piece of fan art, if it's a one-off sketch, not one publisher minds that, you know. What I get really angry with is when people do multiple prints of sometimes other people's artwork, not even their own, and then sell it, you know. And even if they're not saying it's, you know, sometimes they're really cheeky and they say, yeah, this is all my own work, and it's not. But even if they're not saying, that's happened. But even if they're not doing that, it's still wrong, you know.
Yeah. Have you ever had it where someone's booked a table and they all set up, and then when you see them on the day, you see that they've got that type of stuff, and then you think, shit.
I mean, that experience was what prompted me to take action, really, because I felt like I was being a hypocrite by not chucking them out. But in all fairness, I'd never advertised publicly that I didn't want that sort of thing at the show. So I felt, I can't really chuck them out. They're not, you know, I wanted to. So it's why I wanted to make it clear, you know, the policy. And I've said to people, if you're not sure, just get in touch, you know. And also, for me, it's about encouraging people to create their own IP, about encouraging people to be creative and do their own thing. Because, yeah, you can do pictures of Batman and Superman or whatever forever. You know, if I wanted to make loads of money out of drawing, I could just do prints of my own artwork, drawing popular characters, and I could probably make quite a lot of money out of that. You know, I'm not going to. Well, first of all, it's wrong and illegal. But secondly, because I don't want it. I want my characters to be the ones that people pay for. Mm. And yeah, that's harder. That's hard work. Branding your characters, creating your own IP, it's bloody hard work, you know. And I admire anyone who does it. Like some of the guys that you were talking about earlier from the, what's that comic called? Tom. Dot Dino, you know?
Yeah.
Those guys, brilliant, you know, how they're branding their product and how they're getting their IP out there. And I can tell you that they've put a lot of work into that.
Yeah.
There's so many people doing that. And every time you see somebody just selling prints of popular characters to make a quick book, it sort of spits in the face of the people who are working their ass off to create their own thing and put it out there, you know.
I will say to people to definitely endeavour to check out, you know, small press artists and stuff who are doing their own stuff. Not just their own characters, just sometimes they do beautiful illustrations that are just prints and stuff. I know I always usually pick up a print from Nanny Bim.
Her stuff is brilliant.
It's amazing. I've got a couple of her prints like framed and stuff. And also she's great anyway. You should go up and see her at whatever show she's at. But, you know, you look through the prints that she's got, you know, it's original stuff, and it's just beautiful. You know, you look at it and you just think, how can that not be on my wall? You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, it's her line, you know, how she draws and how she paints.
Yeah.
It's just beautiful. I mean, years and years ago, she sent me a book that she published, and I was selling it through Small Zone, actually. Yeah. And that's how I got to know it. And she's exhibited in a lot of our shows. And every year I see the new work, and every year I'm blown away.
Yeah,
it's just you know, and I'm not what you would call a manga fan. My phone's dying. I'm just gonna have to plug it in. I'm not a manga fan in the traditional sense.
Yeah.
So I tend not to lean towards that sort of work.
I'm the same. I'm exactly the same. Yeah.
Yeah, me too. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think the thing as well, Shane, is people go to these conventions and they think, oh, Deadpool sketch, or, you know, that'll be worth some money because Deadpool's popular, you know. But the actual real investment is taking a chance on someone like you've talked about there. Or Sally Thompson, if you know Sally's work. I always try and buy something from her because it's so beautiful. Yeah. You know, and that's the stuff, never mind a fucking coloured-in Deadpool photograph or something. Do you know what I mean? Whatever it's going to be. It's going to be worth nothing. It's worth, it's devalued as soon as you hand over the money. But something that you're taking a chance on a small creator, especially if it's a beautiful stuff, that's the thing that might well be.
Also, just from an art perspective, if someone comes into your house, there's probably a good chance that a lot of your friends aren't necessarily comic fans or whatever. If they see a big Deadpool on the wall, they might completely dismiss that. But if, you know, some of these things, they might just stop and look at them because it goes beyond the comic medium.
Yeah,
you know. Of course it does. Yeah, and that's the thing as well. It's promoting the artist. You know, you're supporting the artist. You know, you're supporting the artist if you buy their Deadpool print, aren't you? But you're also supporting that idea that it's okay to do that shit. You know, and so I don't want to support that, and I don't really want it on my show. You know,
yes,
so. Yeah, that's my stance on that.
Have you ever come up against stuff with like questionable content, as in
rude?
Yeah, essentially. Yeah, we saw some stuff at London Super Comic Con, which is like fucking hell.
Well, the hentai side of things as well can be quite cutting some.
I mean, you could have a whole podcast on that subject, couldn't you?
Yeah.
I think you should, actually. I think it'd be good. But I had so many debates on Facebook. I mean, people who know me know I like to debate on Facebook. But I think that's one of the things that I really feel strongly about is censorship. And there are things that I see in books that I don't like that make me feel sick. But I have the option not to buy the book.
Yep.
And then people will say, oh, what if kids get hold of it? Well, that's irrelevant because it is the parents' responsibility to make sure the kids don't see it. It is not the artist's responsibility. So my stance is basically anything goes in art. it doesn't matter how bad it is, because it's art and it can do what it likes as far as I'm concerned. If I'm offended, that's my problem. I don't have to read it. But, you know, that's where I sit.
But that's when you, I mean, from that perspective, you're looking at something that has a cover, and when you open it up, oh, filth, unbelievable.
Yeah.
But some people, I know we've heard people say that there's been stuff on display at a table.
That's a different ball game, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I've seen it on the poster behind a stall. You know, and you're not you're not just talking hentai. A lot of hentai signifies younger kids and stuff, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And that can't be. To me,
what are they doing with it? That's the thing. I mean, I don't think you should be displaying it on public where kids can just see it.
Yes,
because there is a big difference between what you're portraying and who can see it. You know, if it's in public and kids are going to see it, that's totally different. You know, but what an adult can see and what, you know, don't think you should ever tell an adult what they can or cannot read or enjoy as art. You know, and I, and my feelings on that is, I don't like a lot of it myself, but I would never want it censored. You know, not to adults.
What would you class as art?
Anything that is creative, anything that isn't purely functional, is art. You know, and I know people have different, you know, criteria for what they call art. You hear it all the time. See, I told you this could be another podcast. But what is art? Yeah, it's a good question. But that my answer is simple: anything that isn't purely functional is art, because it's been created, it's been designed. It is the difference between humanity and the animals is art, because we express in a constructive way, and we create things and we make things and we are creative and we tell stories and we make music, and all of that is art, you know.
I heard a quote from Francis Bacon, I think it was, who said it's the recreation from one thing into another medium as art. So it's representative of a feeling or a color or a scene or, you know, into something else, which I thought was quite an interesting theory.
That sort of works for me. I mean, this is the thing. People try and, can't say the word, compartmentalise. You know what I'm trying to say? They put it in boxes and they try and give it criteria. This is where you start going wrong, you know? And this is why art education is so bad for most part, is because they have criteria, they have all these things they have to do that are completely irrelevant to what makes a good artist, you know? Okay. Technical ability to draw is one thing, but being a good artist is totally different.
So would you adopt Alan Moore's attitude that, you know, we've spent all these years showing violence, why can't we show sex? Is that something you'd agree with?
Yeah, totally. I mean, I've got a copy of Lost Girls here now in my bookshelf right next to me.
Yeah.
You know, it's not the best thing I've ever read. It's not, I don't think it's, you know, it's, you've got to be, you can't look at it just as a piece of pornography, you know?
Yeah.
I look at it at the merits of, is it a good book? For me, it's not a great book, actually.
Yeah.
You know, it's not, I don't think it's one of Alan's best pieces. But I think it got marred by all the controversy. But it's an interesting idea. And I quite like the idea. But so what if it's even the phrase pornographic is misused so often, you know, people.
Yeah.
But you know, pornography, what is pornography? You know, it's not just tits and ass.
Don't set them off. Jesus.
How many comics are actually pornographic? You know, most American comics technically are pornographic in the true sense of the word.
Oh, he's opening up a whole can of worms, isn't he?
Yeah, this can go anywhere.
Guys, talk about that for the next hour.
All I got to say is this: to all those people out there currently expressing themselves, stop it, you'll go blind.
I hope they're not doing it while listening to this show.
I hope they are.
I do.
These are all just my opinions, by the way. You know, take it or leave it. You know, it doesn't really matter. You know,
I personally, Shane, I think, I agree with you. I think sex, there's an audience for sex, same as there is for violence. You know, I think if it strays beyond the age limit, then I think you definitely have to stop it. I've seen hentai stalls that have had drawings of underage girls, you know, and boys, and I think that can't be allowed.
Yeah.
That is hard to look at, isn't it? You look at that and you have this sick feeling, you know?
I mean, it's also a crime as well, dude. Do you know what I mean? It's also...
Yeah. Yeah. It's illegal at the end of the day, and so you have to respect the law, and that is the bottom line.
I complained about a stall at MCM 3 or 4 years ago, and they removed it for that reason, that they were showing. You know, they had nudity on the posters, not child nudity, but adult nudity on the posters behind the tables that anyone passing by could see. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think you have to be careful with that. I would say. Would you agree?
Definitely. Or? I mean, I watch out for stuff like that at the cons, you know. And you have to use your discretion, you really do.
You do, don't you? Because it can be a robot with tits, let's face it, you know.
Yeah.
There's a few robot mecha women out there that, you know, look like they're naked. Exactly. It's painted silver. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. You've got to be careful. But there is this thing about depicting stuff, though, that I always think about, you know, when you're talking about the really, really bad stuff. I don't think we should be ignoring the fact that these things happen in the world in our fiction.
Yes,
you know, I think we should be telling the stories. We should have scenes that depict these awful acts, but otherwise we're denying that they happen. But to graphically depict them to the point that it's illegal and it, you know, it's damaging or whatever is a different thing. You know, you can suggest...
It's different. It's glorifying. You can suggest things. Yeah.
It's a responsibility of it, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, if it's
Spotlight, you know, a movie like Spotlight, which is about child abuse, you know, that needs to be told.
Exactly. But, you know, yeah, that's my point. It's that's a very good example as well. And you have to depict these things. You have to tell stories about them. But it's how you do it. And yeah, there's always going to be grey areas. There's no line. You know, there's just
each case on its merits. I think often.
Yeah. You need to definitely. Definitely, but I think you have to be really careful not to set a line to the point where stories can't be told, you know? Valid stories can't be told. I mean, and that's why I worry about censorship of anything, really. But yeah, obviously, I mean, the stuff you're talking about, there's no place for it, you know?
Yeah.
The extreme stuff, because that isn't just telling a story. That is just glorifying a criminal act to the point of, it's beyond pornography, you know? Yeah.
Have you ever had to throw anyone out of a convention? Or
I have had to throw someone out of a convention once,
right?
because they were rolling a joint,
right? Okay. Right.
Just so all you potheads out there know, I'm watching you. But yeah, that was the only reason I've ever had to throw anyone out, as far as I can remember. James, my ex-partner with Bix, may have thrown a few people out.
Right, okay.
I don't know.
I enjoyed Bix, actually. I went to Bix. It was a great little festival, wasn't it?
Mm.
Very good.
You loved doing that. It was great.
Yeah, great venue as well. Really good venue.
Well, the think tank that we were there, we think we were there for like 4 years or something.
Yeah.
That was... Oh God, I wish I could afford it. I wish I could still afford it now, you know? It was such a good venue. But it just got more and more expensive every year to the point where it just... couldn't do it there anymore, but it, a great venue. You know, if anyone's out there looking at doing any type of event, you know, I can recommend them because they really are a good bunch of people there. Okay. I don't know if it's still the same staff, but really good. Yeah.
Okay. Because the other thing I was wondering about is, I know Shrewsbury's. This is its first year, is it?
First one. It was an opportunity. You know, like I said, they asked me to do it, and so it's grown out of that opportunity. It is. It's totally different to anything else I've ever done.
Because conventions that run for a few years, I think I sometimes miss a year on certain conventions because you get caught in a trap of inviting the same guests. Is that?
Yeah.
You know, you become friendly with these people in almost, I know, I think they, I don't suppose they'll mind because, you know, they won't care, but I think Thought Bubble often makes the mistake of inviting the same people, I think, over and over again.
That happens. I've seen that happen, actually. I mean, the thing to remember is that, you know, conventions, as we know them now, are still a relatively new thing because until 2000, I don't know, for a long time there was one or two conventions a year.
Yeah.
Now there are, you know, 70 or whatever it is.
Yeah, every weekend. And more
than that, you know.
Yeah.
Some weekends, three on. So it's it's a crazy situation. So yeah, it's still evolving, isn't it? And I think a lot of convention organizers have fallen into this trap of they make friends with their guests because they're good guests and they do a good job and they might be cheaper or whatever. And so they get the same guys back because they're really easy to deal with and they're really professional. And that's why these guys are always the same guys you see at the show, because these are the guys who are good to deal with. You know, yeah. These are the best guests. For as far as a convention organizer's point of view, these are the best people. But you also have to think, well, yeah, that's cool, but what about the fans?
Yeah.
What about the fans? They want to see different people. And that's why, you know, I really do try and at least rotate it a bit. You know, I have like this email that I send out to the guests that I know really well. And I'll just say, look, guys, you understand, I can't invite you every year. It's not because I don't love you, you know. It's not because I don't think you're wonderful. It's because, you know, the fans are bloody sick to death of seeing you every year, you know, and they get it. You know, they understand. They're professional people. They get it. But I always have the option that they can come along for free and be an attending professional. So they can come along. They don't have to pay. They can join in. They can still interact with fans. I'm just not going to pay for their hotel and all the other stuff that I usually pay for.
Right, okay. You know, interesting.
And that's another difference as well with the way I operate. I pay for guest stuff, you know, their flights, their travel, all that sort of stuff. So to me, there's a difference between someone you invite and someone who invites
a free table, for example, or someone who...
Yeah.
I'll get you pick up at the airport and stuff like that, yeah.
Yeah, there are levels, you know, there are levels of what, and it's not always because they're a bigger star or anything like that. It's because you have to have a guest list and those are people that you invite. So anyone else is, you know, who asks, can I be a guest? I've always thought it was quite a funny question.
Yeah, so,
can I be a guest?
Surely a guest is someone that gets asked. They don't say,
So I know it's a grammatical thing, but I've always laughed at that question. And I get
is
it all
that just
time.
The email reply? Can I be a guest? And you reply,
I feel like saying, well, actually, at this point in time, it's impossible because I haven't invited you. But I know what they mean. You know, I'm not going to be a dick. So yeah. I just say to them, you know, if the guest list is full, you can come along for free. You can be treated as a guest. I'm just not going to pay the bill, you know.
Yeah. Right.
And that enables me then to have a larger guest list as well. Because a lot of the guys at ICE this year just want to be there. You know, they want to be part of it, which is really nice, you know, to have that support. Some of the people, some of these guys, professionals, you know, they really are, in the true sense of the word, professionals. They understand what I'm trying to do. They understand what the fans want. And they you know, they're there. They're there for us, you know.
Yeah.
So, great. Speaking of ICE, Shrewsbury Comics Arts Festival. Let's sign off on that one. Where is that and what date is it?
Okay. Yeah. Shrewsbury Comic Art Festival, International Comic Arts Festival, I should say. next weekend from the 15th, 16th, and 17th. So Friday, Saturday, and Sunday at Shrewsbury Quarry, which is the big park in Shrewsbury. Absolutely beautiful venue.
It's not like a Doctor Who quarry, is it? It's not like just...
No. It's not one of them. It's called The Quarry because I don't know. I did some historical shit. I don't know. But it's a big park, basically. And it's got beautiful, like something, it's called the Dingle. It's like a big flower thing in the middle. And that is the venue. And it's brilliant. They have the Shrewsbury Flower Show every year. They have the folk festival. They have music festivals. They have all sorts of stuff going on. Fantastic venue. And we've got this space age tent there. That's all I can call it, is space age. It's basically the same that they use for the stage for the music festival. They just turn it on its side. And it really is spectacular. Okay. We were originally going to just have marquees, but when the music festival moved to September, we still had to use the tent. So we thought, let's use it for the comic festival. So it's going to look amazing and it's going to get lots of people interested. So that's there at the quarry, 21 guests, top names, absolutely free to get in. There's evening entertainment. We've just confirmed we've got some acoustic music in the evening from some top local people. That's on the Saturday. On the Sunday, we've got the comedy festival. So we've got some stand-up comedians. A few of these guys have been on TV as well. They're really top people, you know, who are doing this. So the comedy festival is free if you've already bought a ticket. If you haven't bought a ticket, then the comedy festival, I think it's a fiver or something like that, which is at the end of the night. So there's entertainment in the evenings on Saturday and Sunday. And it's free to get in. You know, you meet all these people, you can be part of the festival for free.
How can you say no to that?
It's a no-brainer, really, isn't it?
So, and when you're done with that, and just when you think, oh, I need a cup of tea and just a 5 minutes to gather my thoughts, you can't, because ICE 2016 is happening. Is it September? Am I?
September the 10th, yeah.
Cool. A lot of people out there in the small press know of ICE had tables at ICE. But tell us a bit more about that, where that is and what's happening.
Okay, it's at the studio venue, which is our usual venue. We've had that for the last 2 years, which is an excellent venue. You know, it's multi-floored. It's got large and small rooms. We've got two big rooms upstairs that are for exhibitors. And we've got another slightly smaller but still quite large room downstairs, which is, I've tried to focus that room for small press, and there's a real buzz in there. I don't know if you guys have ever been in that room when it was the small press room, but it had a great atmosphere, and it's right next to the bar, which is even better.
Right. It's good for the small press crowd then.
Yeah. They can drown their sorrows when they're not selling any comics, you know. And it's not our fault, but yeah, it's a great buzz in there. And you know, actually, you know, on a serious note, you know, I had some great feedback last year that people did actually really well, because our attendance had doubled from the previous year. And attendance needs to bloody well double this year, because I don't want to be broke at the end of it. So,
right.
But the plan is for attendance to double this year as well. So that'll pretty much fill the venue. So it's going to be, it's going to be a great year. So we've got the three big rooms. We've got two programs of talks going on. The main program of talks is by the Geek Syndicate guys, who I'm sure you're aware of, your respected competition in podcast land.
Oh, there's no competition here. We're all friends, and we're the best. Anyway.
Yeah, of course.
Until you appear on their show, and then you'll say the same to them.
Then we'll turn our backs on you.
One day, guys, you might be hosting the podcast at the show. There you go.
That's a frightening thought.
That's how it all came about. Like years ago, the first ever live podcast at a convention was at BIX.
It was Geek Syndicate, wasn't it?
Geek Syndicate, and it was really exciting. We had who do we have? Esad and
was Nicola
Esad
Scott there that year. I've got a feeling
she was. I think probably. Yeah. Everyone was there that year. We had Jonathan Ross that year. It was very odd. But yeah, and then we had Adi Gran. That's right. Adi Granov and Esad Ribic did a panel with the guys, and it was great. And we've done lots of stuff since with them, you know. And so they're hosting the whole program again this year. In the main sort of events room, and that's going to be absolutely brilliant, because those guys, they're good fun. So yeah, that's ICE in a nutshell, really. So you've got about 120 exhibitors, you've got about 50 guests this year. It's absolutely, I mean, I could just, the guest list, you'd need a podcast just for me to read the guest list out, you know.
Excitingly, you've got a couple of ex-guests of ours, but you've also got Carl Potts, who I'm quite excited to see on that, haven't you?
Yeah, I was excited when he got in touch, actually, because Carl approached me about coming over, and I was just flabbergasted. You know, I worshipped this guy in the 80s, you know, when I was reading all
G.I. Joe and stuff.
And Alien Legion I used to like,
of course,
you know,
yeah, that's brilliant, yeah,
stuff. And you know, this guy's a legend, what's he talking to me for? So yeah, it was really nice that he wanted to come, and he wants to come over and do the Comics Uncovered, you know. So he's going to be doing at some sort of event with us there. I don't know exactly what it is yet, but I think it's going to be some sort of class,
right?
At Comics Uncovered. And obviously, as he's here for the weekend, he's going to be a guest at ICE as well. So that's really exciting. And we've got Marguerite Bennett as well, who was sort of one of our headliners, I guess, because she's become a bit of a superstar. She wasn't so well known when we booked her, you know. It's another case of this, you know, this is somebody I'm really interested in, but, you know, as a creator, I like what she's doing. I like the, you know, all the stuff that she's working on. And it was Mike Martz, actually, at Aftershock, who suggested her and said, you should get her over, you know, she's going places. And I'll take a punt on that. Right. And, you know, over the last 12 months, she's become this superstar, you know. And so, great. It's great to have her on board. And lots of British people as well, not just the overseas people. We've got some great, we've got Charlie Adlard, Sean Phillips, Duncan Fregredo.
Yeah,
and some people I've not seen at cons. Peter Milligan, we've got.
Okay, cool. Yeah,
all those, Jamie Delano. Some really interesting.
Yeah, Jamie Delano did nice last year, but you don't often see him, do you?
He lives in Northampton, doesn't he? So
okay.
It's a local con, I think. So you don't see him at conventions, and this is what I want. I want to try and get people you don't see at conventions.
Yeah,
you know, we've got. Got Cam Smith doing an inking class, which I'm at Comics on Code, which I'm really excited about because I loved his work, you know, back in the day. So that'll be interesting. So yeah, I mean, the guest list. I can't remember them all, to be honest.
People go to find out more about the guest list then online?
Well, everything about all of our events you can find on the Small Zone website. So, because like it's the easiest website to remember, it's just smallzone.co.uk, and that links to Shrewsbury, it links to ICE, and it links to Comics Uncovered.
So there's so much to check out there.
There's a lot. I mean, pretty much, if you love comics, every something within your area of fascination will be covered, you know, by the events, which is nice, you know.
Yeah.
Awesome. Brilliant. Well, it all sounds amazing. So thank you very much for telling us more about it.
Yeah, it's great, mate. Yeah.
Thanks for allowing me to plug myself. That's pardon? It's good to be doing this podcast.
Oh, that's his way of expressing himself. Yes, Shane's going to stick with us for the rest of it. And he talked about two wonderful events that you need to check out there. But what other events are there coming up, Tony?
Yeah, there's a few. Far be it from me to announce any other events, but if you can't get to Shrewsbury, there's on the 16th at 1 p.m. is the Cursed Earth Uncensored at Gosh Comics, which is the release party for the uncensored version, which includes I think it's a Ronald McDonald and a Burger King reference in it from Judge Dredd from the Cursed Earth. It's very good. Who's laughing? Have they read it?
No, I was just laughing because it just made me laugh.
There's a lady at my work we call Ronald McDonald because she's got purple hair, but I don't think she knows.
Ronald McDonald's got red hair, Tony. Get your references right.
I don't know.
Grimace was purple, wasn't it?
Sorry?
Grimace was the purple one.
Who's Grimace?
One of the McDonald's.
Was he like the Hamburglar, or it is?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Anyway.
Oh, God, that's going back.
The 17th is a comic mart at the Royal National Hotel, Russell Square, which I shall probably go to. If you go between 11 and 12, it's a fiver. After 12, it's free, but you can fill a bag full of comics for a fiver. The 6th of August is Bristol Comics Expo at the Doubletree by Hilton. Info that is that if you want to write in, you fancy a table or, you know, ask to be a guest, write into comicsexpo@hotmail.co.uk. See, some people still use Hotmail. That's amazing, isn't it?
I will be there. I'll be at that one. I'm exhibiting as Scar Comics there.
Oh, cool. Okay.
Yeah.
We will see you there. Yeah.
We're gonna pop down, aren't we?
We're gonna be there.
Yeah.
Cool.
On the 17th of August at Gosh again is Brendan McCarthy is signing. He's doing a signing and a talk for the launch of his book Dream Gang. Now, this is a series that ran in Dark Presents recently, and it is absolutely amazing. I'm not really surprised that not more people are talking about it. It's just a real, as is typical of his work, a real sort of head fuck of a book, but beautiful in doing so. Then the 27th to the 28th is Melksham Comic Con, melkshamcomiccon.com. We had an absolute blast last year. Really, really good fun. I can't really make out from the website either. They've got every single guest the same as last year, or they haven't announced them yet. So I'm not really sure.
I think it's more about the Facebook rather than the website, I would say.
Is it? Right, okay. Yeah, right,
I guess so.
Right. Well, we're going to be there anyway, so that should be. Yeah. You've got a table, Vince?
I do have a table, as does my table mate, Sean Dobie, and he'll be launching Descending Outlands. Yeah.
Quille, number three.
Coming up next week is the most important date in my calendar, 17th of July, Dan's birthday.
Hey.
Birthday, Dan.
Yes.
1 week today.
The all-powerful Zool gets his birthday.
There you go. That's it for events.
Nice. We've got a few shout-outs. Dan, I know there's a couple of shout-outs you wanted to...
I started listening again to the Empire of Geek podcast, mentioning another podcast on the show. It's a really good one to check out. Very fun. They used to have it on, it's Podomatic, and I lost the password for it, and it was such a massive ball ache trying to get the password out of the fucking... You know, you email someone and they don't respond, and then it's just a nightmare. So, oh, I can't fucking keep listening to this. No, it's on iTunes, so
right,
it's job done. So yeah, check them out. It's good.
Cool.
Nice.
I've got a Kickstarter shout out, but that actually folds into the recommendation for the week.
We'll save it for that. As we all know, Small Press Day was yesterday. What was the date yesterday? I lose track of the days.
Okay.
It was the 9th of July was Small Press Day. Stuff was happening up and down the country. I was sat at home making comics,
cranking
furiously, but that's how I express myself. If you had a nice time at Small Press Day, hopefully not doing that. Then
it's all art.
Yeah, let us know. I know on the actual day there was a lot of creators out there just giving shout outs to the shops they went to. You know, they had tables at and were selling books. And we're always up for giving a shout out to worthy comic book shops, etc. We gave a quick shout out to see if anyone had a nice day there. We got a couple of responses. Alan Henderson at Shadow 1972. He said the Glasgow event organised by FP Glasgow, which I presume is Forbidden Planet Glasgow, he said was great. He saw both a new audience and returning readers.
That's good.
Yeah,
he's a lad,
pretty cool.
Yeah, nice excellent guy.
And at Toes of Fury,
right, here we go.
He said Small Press Day equals a dream day, a true celebration of up and coming talent producing genuinely engaging work. 10 out of 10. That's what he
fucking
gave
hell, that sounds good.
Cool.
Yeah, I know. I don't know where he went.
Yeah, we roofied him, clearly.
Yeah, speaking of roofies, Gareth A. Hopkins at GR Think, he went down to Gosh and Orbital.
Yeah.
He saw Dirty Rotten Comics, Dan White, and a few others, and then he gave out intercoastal ash cans.
I know, I missed him. I wanted one of them. Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so that was quite cool. A couple of episodes ago, Gareth was on, and it's worth listening to.
Oh, he's brilliant, yeah.
Yeah.
Good. Yeah.
Great guy.
Well, he's a funny guy. Yeah.
Watch this space.
I went to Gosh and Orbital. It was good. Yeah, unfortunately, I missed Chris Wildgoose's sketching and signing with Matt Gibbs, but yeah, it was very buzzy. There's a lot of people there, I've got to tell you.
Oh, nice one.
Yeah, yeah.
Nice. So, hopefully, I know, I think it went well. So next year should be another year. I think, you know, surely we're a Small Press Comics podcast. Surely we should try and sort something out.
Sort something out next year, yeah.
It is your duty to do so, I would say.
Look, Shane, let's not get ideas above our station. We'll probably just go to the park and have a picnic.
It hasn't gone bent. It normally goes bent around now towards the end of the show when we start losing our minds.
I beg your pardon.
Sarah Millman posted that she popped up on a 24-hour podcast.
Yes.
Fucking hell, yeah.
Yes.
24 hours.
I'm 37 years old. I don't need to be doing that. You know what I mean?
Like, we're 24 minutes and we're fucking drifting.
Yeah.
Oh, my word.
Are you going to, Vince, are you going to announce the thing that was announced yesterday? Are you going to talk about that?
What was announced yesterday?
Leamington Spa thing.
Ah, yes. Yes, indeed. Leamington Spa, I just need to bring it up now. Yes, Dan Mallier of Leamington Spa, he's all for pushing the Small Press stuff. And I know he's very much about Comic-Cons being an actual comic event. And he's put something out that I think a lot of people need to check out, especially if you're a Small Press creator, because you could win an actual table. Isn't that right?
Yeah, that's it. There's a few things you can win, aren't there, I think? Yeah.
Yes.
Cool.
Yes.
The table out of the show. Not just a table.
Does that mean you've got to take the table home at the end of the night?
Yeah, you've got to tidy up
after that.
No leaving your rubbish underneath it.
Is it just a little table, like a little miniature one that you can carry home?
It's like those people that have on the A12 in Essex when they have their picnics. Yeah. No, it's much better than that. Dan will kill me now. Yeah, no, it's much better than
that. Yeah, that's a good idea. That's a good idea.
Yes. Yeah. Don't get me started, Tony. Basically, he's starting the Small Press Factor 2016.
Yeah.
Now, it's a little competition. Step one, there's five steps. He's put it on Twitter, and I know the likes of Mike Garley and stuff have retweeted it. So you basically you like the page facebook.com/leamcomiccon, that's LEAM Comic Con, and follow at Leam Comic Con. Step two, complete the entry survey at the Facebook from 9th of July up to midnight, 30th of November 2016. Step three, submit a video. God, this would be chaos, wouldn't it? to leamcomiccon@gmail.com, telling us about you, your comic, and inspiration. Step four, post three copies of your comic to the address that you put, so I'm not going to say the whole address now, or email them a digital version. Then there's the judging. Entries will be judged on originality, artwork, lettering, and story. The winner will be announced by 1st of December 2016. It's got a banner at the bottom, keeping Comic Con about comics and supporting small press talent. And basically, you know, they will give you a table at Leamington Comic Con, which is a great event.
Yeah, it's good fun, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a good event. Yeah.
And it's got a bigger venue this year, I think, as well, isn't it? Or next year, is it?
Yeah, next year. It's March 2017. Because I know Dan wanted to have a year. He took a year out just to gather his thoughts and feelings.
Yeah, I need that.
Before coming back stronger. So I'll put a link in the show notes, but it's definitely something we'll be probably bringing up a couple more times over the next couple of weeks, so everyone should get involved. Yeah, because it is a really good event, and also
I'm gonna have to go to that event. I think I've never been to the Lem.
I keep hearing
like really good things about it.
Yeah, I mean, it's like your stuff. It's made by people that love comics, love Comic Cons, and it's definitely about thinking about the creators and everything.
Yeah. So
when's the submission date? Sorry, mate. Did you say that? Did you?
I did.
Yeah.
Now I've got to bring it back up again.
It's the 30th November 16. Yeah. They've got some impressive judges on this competition, haven't they?
Are you one of them?
Yep.
So you've got to throw a bit of time to work on a comic, then.
Yeah.
I think, is it comics that exist now?
As long as they're made now. If you can
Okay. Fine,
yeah.
It's all about if you've got product that's worthy of a table and some promo, you know, because they'll probably give a shout out to you anyway. So from the 9th of July up to the midnight, the 30th of November. So we've got plenty of time for me to actually get the words right so I don't stumble over
and
that mess.
The big prize is coming on the show, isn't it? That's the big.
Yes.
I can testify to that.
Yeah, you get more women. you become richer.
They're queuing up right now. I'm sitting by my window. I'm sitting by my window, and there's a queue of women right down the street.
They're all with torches and pitchforks.
Yeah, I think I owe them all money. Actually,
they're all showing his guns in there.
Yes. In the future, Dan is going to be one of the guests that we talk to find out more about the show itself. So it's going to be good. I know there's going to be a lot of con organisers that we're going to get on, and they're all excited about hearing how the other people work.
Because yesterday I sent a message to my hero, Seagal, asking him if he was playing any gigs in the UK soon. And Dan immediately sent a gift to me of Steven Seagal close up looking intense. He quite often sends me, to be fair.
Did I tell you I went to see him at a gig live?
Yeah. Was it a life-changing experience, Dan?
My wife now at the time, or not at the time, and a mate, we went to see it for like a laugh. Well, this is going to be just like a car crash. And it was surprisingly good.
Well, I've got an album. I'll lend you it. Very good.
It kind of pulled the rug out from under us.
He's a blues guitarist. Yeah.
He's got a blues band.
It's quite good. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. I'll now send you links to videos all day and all night.
Yeah, there you go.
I want to see these.
There was like a couple of like older ladies like dancing in front of stage trying to catch his eye.
Not made of stone.
Well, I'll tell you what, if you like dancing on a stage because you like comics, then there's one place you need to go.
I'll just stick in my mouth.
Especially if you like the superhero genre. Yes, I'm talking about A Place to Hang Your Cape. It's just the site for you. There's reviews, interviews,
It sounds so genuine.
I'm trying, Shane. I'm really trying. But it's like I'm, every week I'm smashing my head against a fucking brick wall. No, but I tell you what, if you like superheroes, you can smash through that brick wall. Then a place to hang your cape is just a place to go. There's reviews, interviews, essays about the superhero genre. They're good friends of the show. So check out AP2HYC. If you like your comics digitally, if you buy them weekly, like I normally do, because I'm cheapskate and I don't leave my house, then you should check out pipedreamcomics.co.uk. They focus on the digital, whether it's Comixology, and what's the one you use, Tony? Sequential, isn't it?
And yeah. Isneo I use, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, Isneo. That's a new one I need to check out, yeah. Yeah, or webcomics, indeed. They check out loads of new stuff. They've also got a magazine called The Pull List, which you can download from there as well. So if you check out pipedreamcomics.co.uk, and where would we be in this world, in this cold, dark, loveless world, without Down the Tubes?
Hey.
John rang me. Down the tube.
Yeah, John rang me yesterday from his pocket. So I've got a 5-minute audio clip of his pocket.
What does his pocket sound like?
It's quite scrapey. He rang me on. Has anyone ever been phoned on Facebook Messenger? I don't know how his arse cheek did.
I've never read that.
Is he quite a technically savvy man? Or is he
normally, yeah. But he's sort of prone to accidents. I'm going to say that. I love John. He's a top bloke. One of my favourite people in the world. But he's occasionally prone to the accidents. Like the time he texted me saying he's in trouble. And then he forgot to send me the picture of him with his head through some stocks.
Oh, fuck.
So I worried about him for about half an hour.
That time he went downhill in the bathtub.
Yeah, that's like that. That's like that up there in Lancaster.
I'll tell you what, it's not Last of the Summer Wine Down.
That's what it's like down the tubes. That's where we are. And if anyone writes in and says, I'm fucking compo, I'm going to kill you.
You better not be. He's dead.
Is he dead?
Yeah.
Oh, no,
yeah.
Not good. I do like women with saggy stockings.
With what?
You know, saggy stockings. Wasn't that the woman? Didn't she have stockings or something?
Yes. Nora Batty.
Nora Batty, that's it, yeah.
It would have been better if she'd have been called Saggy Stockings, though, wouldn't it? That would have been great.
I'll tell you what, Dan, your knowledge of pop culture, you always know, don't you? You know every time.
He thinks about Nora Batty quite a lot, same as I do.
And he says nothing.
He's thinking about it right now.
If you're kind of not in the UK,
everyone listening to this is listening to her right now, thinking about it right now, aren't they?
Yeah. But unzipping her blouse.
I tell you what, to everyone out there thinking about her, I recommend that you don't. And speaking of recommendations.
Well, no, if you're in America, I recommend you fucking Google her.
No.
Google Nora Batty.
Yeah.
Please.
And
please
Compo,
don't.
Last of Summer Wine. Alan, I know he listens, he's a good lad in New York. Please Google Last of Summer Wine.
Yeah, Vanda, check it out. Yeah.
All right, all you American listeners out there, I want this to go viral. Hashtag Tony is Compo.
I've got a theme for my art collection this year at New York. Last of Summer Wine. He's going to go to Yannick Paquette and going, do you know Last of Summer Wine?
Have you got any reference?
Yeah, well, yeah. Funny enough, I've got a porno that I made before Batty.
Oh dear. Anyway, recommendations, Tony.
Okay, right. I've gone a little bit off reservation with this one, to be fair.
Not like you.
From the past. I went into Forbidden Planet yesterday and I bought The Complete Harlem Heroes, which is 39 years old, I believe, because it's from Prog 1, 2000 AD. Absolutely beautiful stuff. Hopefully everyone who's listening has read it. Art by Dave Gibbons and Massimo Ballardinelli. It went from being Harlem Heroes to a strip called Inferno, but it's essentially the same story kind of thing. It's clearly influenced by a combination of Rollerball, the James Caan movie, not that abortion of a movie that came out a few years ago, and the Harlem Globetrotters, who were a big deal in the 70s. And sort of great sort of funny characters, as well as being sort of great sportsmen. And it pulls a lot from both of those series, really. It's an up-and-coming aeroball team who wear jetpacks and fly around throwing balls into holes. Their transport is tampered with, and it crashes, and half the team die. And they recruit new kids, and they recruit an aging veteran and a couple of reservists, and they fight on, and they go on to win the world championship. I don't think that's a spoiler. It's a 39-year-old comic, so you know what I mean? It's really good. It stands up so well. I mean, I think some UK comics back from them doesn't, but I think this really does. And they show within the book, they've also got Carlos Trigo, who was initially meant to draw it. He bailed on it, I think, unexpectedly, and they got Dave Gibbons on board, who was fairly new at the time, you know, as a comics artist, to draw it. And they include the four pages that Carlos Trigo started drawing, and it would have made it a whole different thing. Would have made it much straighter, less imaginative, and so it's really nice to see Dave's stuff in it. It's also worth remembering that this is a comic from 1977 and 1978, and it's about an all-black team, you know, and it's not really talked about enough these days, you know, in the days where we are trying to make comics more diverse, that you've got 2000 AD in the 70s, you know, which was a whole different world back then, one of their best stories with their best, I mean, Pat Mills starts writing it, you know, all about a black team of people, and it's very good, really, really good. They go up against some really funny teams. They go up against the Flying Scotsman, who are a load of dockers from Glasgow. Bearing in mind, a lot of people who wrote and drew this and read to, you know, create comics at the time were, you know, from Dundee and all this sort of thing. The Montezuma Mashers, the Siberian Wolves, who are just sort of Vikings with helmets on and jetpacks. The Teutonic Knights, who are the German ones, and the Bushido Blades, who of course had to be, you know, had to have samurai swords because they were Japanese. Beware, though, there's a couple of moments in it, which I'm surprised that 2000 AD left in. I don't know. Is it politically correct to call Japanese people Japs? I'm going to say not. You know, so there's a couple of moments in it. You think, oh, that's a bit 1970s, you know. Yeah, calm down a bit, you know. There's also a bit of social commentary in it. When they go to Glasgow, it's quite a strange sequence because they go to Glasgow and they spend a couple of pages saying, you know, Glasgow's fallen on hard times. The oil boom of the 1980s caused a crash and everyone's poor and they're pouring all their money into the arable, you know what I'm saying? And it was right on the cusp of what was the miners' strike back then. So it's sort of quite interesting the way that it deals with time. The main, after the first issue, which Pat Mills wrote, it then went on to Tom Tully, who was best known for writing Roy the Rovers. So it's got that sort of edgy, you see, will they win, won't they win, is it going to be a draw, a score in the last minute kind of feel to it. He also did Steel Claw, he did The Mind of Wolfie Smith, Dan Dare, Johnny Redden, he did quite a lot of Doctor Who in the TV comic era. As I say, halfway through it becomes Inferno, and it becomes a whole sort of more sort of apocalyptic affair, much more violent. Massimo Ballardinelli draws it. People are killed off willy-nilly here and there. You know, main characters are sort of killed off in the middle of it. It's very, very interesting. And at the back, there's a lot of sort of text pieces. It's like, you know, when you used to get in English comics, you used to get like a cut-through section of a building or a spaceship or something like that.
Yeah.
And it's got inside the Harlem Heroes ship. And you can sort of... I absolutely devoured it. I read it virtually in one sitting yesterday. Very, very good. You know where you're going to get it. You're going to get it online at the 2000 AD online shop, or you're going to get it in bookshops. Very good. Yeah, that's my one.
Awesome. Dan, what about
nice you? Nice one. We had a comic sent in to us, Regret, issue 1, written by Jason Ford, David Pung. The tagline is, Regret is one part Commendi, one part Dune, one part Shadowrun, and all action. Welcome to the world of mutants and messiahs. Okay. It's currently running on Kickstarter. It's got a fair few days, 25 days yet to run, and it's already $253 above its goal. So it's backed anyway. From the Kickstarter, the issue one's already been drawn, ready to go. What I really like is they got a $1 pledge, which will get you the PDF of the comic.
Nice.
Great. Yeah. If you want to do two or three, that doesn't bother me too much. When people just start charging like $5, $6, $10 for a PDF.
Yeah. Especially if it's a single issue, it's just not. Yeah.
It's a bit kind of, whoa. What is that?
Oh. My phone disapproving of the idea.
Tasering your balls in the background.
I've followed, been a friend of David on the artist on social media for a little while now, and he's only recently started kind of getting, he's one of these people that used to draw quite a lot and then stepped out for it for years, like 20 odd years, I think. And then he's got back into it, and it's interesting seeing just over like 12 months from where he's like, well, I'm going to get back into this, and he starts drawing every day. Right up to now, when he's come from like quite creaky up to the level now, which is really promising, got some really nice moments in it. So good work, David. Nice one. It's good to see you pumping out the old comic work. So yeah, the $1, if you can't go wrong, check it out, see what you think.
Nice one. Yeah, cool.
That is a bargain.
Yeah.
My recommendation for this week, I went to the bookshelf and I pulled out the book Christo. Have you heard of this one?
I've not heard of that one.
Written by Sam Rhodes, who's known for writing Silicon Heart, amongst other things. The art is Alex Sheikman. And basically what Christo is, I know this did the rounds like a couple of years ago when it was first launched. And it was one I heard about and then eventually got my hands on. And it's basically The Count of Monte Cristo, but done during the Russian Revolution.
Okay.
Look
at you, highbrow.
Well, yeah. I love a bit of revenge, me. You'll learn that, Tony.
Yeah, sexy.
Lovely. This dog... quality bants. Right. It says on the back of the book, this document tells of how a Cossack officer was betrayed by his three closest friends and incarcerated for 20 years. How he assumed another man's identity to escape and then took his final bloody revenge. Now, I love the story of the Count of Monte Cristo. It's an awesome one. It's one of those classics. And to put this in the setting of like Stalin and the, you know, that sort of Russian era, you know, hammers and sickles and that whole look, it works perfectly for this. And it opens up, basically he's being interrogated. This scarred man, like half of his face is burnt and he's being beaten and they're finding out who he is. And then the story goes on from there. It's told like sort of evidence. And it is such a great book. It's dark, it's brutal, but it's also very beautifully told. You know, there's a definite rhythm. It's a one-shot deal. You know, it's a nice sort of collection. It doesn't overstay its welcome. We're talking about like 50 pages, something like that, 40 to 50 pages.
All right.
And they've got like sections in the back which are sort of type date confessions and information about the people of the time, because there's obviously historical figures that are weaved in and out of it as well. But apart from that, just the action and how this guy sort of takes his revenge is just brilliant. Like it's a minor spoiler, but I just have to describe this. He buries one person up until his neck in the middle of a field. And he walks away, leaving him there. And the guy's like, "You can't leave me here." And he says, "Don't worry, you'll have the crows for company. And anyway, today is harvest day." And there's a splash page of this bloke, his head in the ground, and behind him there's a line of combine harvesters coming towards him. So, you know, that's sort of reminiscent of those brutal sort of 70s revenge flicks. You know, that sort of like create. You know, yeah. Takes it to that real dark place. But it's a brilliant book. I know that this had a lot of like nice reviews. I mean, on the back you've got like quotes from like Pat Mills, David Lloyd, you know, even John Locke's on there. You know, cheeky old John Locke.
Look at him getting in there.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, our friend Pat. Well, you know,
friend of the show, slippery friend.
He says the Count of Monte Cristo is masterfully retold in this excellent take on Stalin's Russia. And that's a man who knows what he's talking about when it comes to history.
Yeah, yeah.
So, if you see Sam at a show, he's a real nice guy. He's very softly spoken. And he'll have Silicon Heart and he'll have Christo. It's Christo with a K. Nicely designed cover as well. So I definitely recommend you check it out.
Nice one.
Shane, lead us out, my friend. What do you want to recommend to people?
Well, it might be something people are already aware of. It's not brand new, but it's something that I've read like three times cover to cover now since it came through the post, and that is Gold Tiger.
Okay, yeah.
I don't know if you guys are familiar with it.
This is basically the Kickstarter. Yeah,
it was a Kickstarter originally by my good friend Jimmy Broxton, written by Guy Adams, and it's a very cool idea. Basically, it's the comic from 2000 AD. That was originally from 1966, but really it wasn't. It's all made up, but it's a great idea, and it's created in this style of old European and British newspaper strips, and it's got a really cool vibe. And it's more than just a comic as well. There's loads of articles about the fictional writers, fictional creators. There's lots of graphic design in there, photography. It's a beautifully put together book. There's a lot of text and photos and stuff like that, but the actual strips that are featured in there have been reproduced in such a way that it really does look like they're, you know, being cut out of a newspaper and
reproduced, you know, on a copier or something. I don't know if you guys are familiar with Jimmy's art, but it's it really is top-notch stuff.
And if you're not, he's at the Shrewsbury Festival, isn't he?
He is, yeah. I think it's his only appearance this year at a festival, I think, as well. Right. He's going to be, yeah, he's going to be signing copies, and he's always really good as well. He'll do quick sketches for free, and Jimmy's sketches are great. They're really fluid stuff. But the actual strips themselves are lovely. They really are. When you go through the book, and you just get this sense of adventure that it's conveying so well. It really is like a traditional adventure story, you know, and it's quite risky in parts as well, because it's, you know, you were talking about that sort of 70s thing about some things being does that really work now? Yeah. Is that acceptable? And they push that a little bit, you know.
Okay.
they push it to the point where it makes you think about, you know, how comics and entertainment in general has changed over the years, you know, what's acceptable and what isn't acceptable. And
yeah, they never seem to rerun Mind Your Language, do they?
Yeah, well, exactly, yeah.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of cool stuff as well that's sort of, it's an interesting subject, actually, you know, when you were talking about it before, my ears pricked, you know, because it goes back to the old, you know, this is depicting characters. This is depicting the opinions of people at that time. And to ignore that reality in art, you know, in a story is a bit, I don't know, a little bit irresponsible, I think. So yeah. What this, I mean, it's not, you know, obliquely indecent or anything like that, but there are little jokes in there, little comments that make you think, yeah, this could have been made, you know, in the 60s or whatever.
We're giving it a historical context through doing that.
Exactly.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, yeah. It, very much so. There's even a self-portrait of the fictional creator from 1974, you know. And yeah. I think, I can't remember, Sergio Baretti, I think, or something like that was right. The name or something like that. It's, I think he was Italian or something. And it's great. They create this whole world, this whole universe that, where these creators came from, what they did, and their backstory. I mean, the actual creation of the fictional creators of the strip is one of the most fun parts of the book, you know?
Yeah.
And it really is. It's something very different, something you don't get a lot of in comics or in any sort of publishing these days, this level of total creativity from the front page right to the back page.
Yeah.
Every single page, there's so much thought gone into it. So much consideration to the design and the reader's experience, you know. So, that's my recommendation.
There you go. And you can get it from Shrewsbury International Comic Art Festival.
You can. And you can get it off Amazon. And
we don't want them to do that. We want them to go to the festival.
Go to the festival. It's the only place.
Get it from the festival.
Exactly. It's the only place you can get it.
And,
Apart from Rebellion.
Who are they?
And who are we? Well, we want you to let us know who you think we are. And there's several different ways we need to be quiet, Compo. There's several different ways you can do it. You can email us, awesomecomicspod.
I want it in the links this week.
At gmail.com. If you've got any books or events coming up, let us know. tony.awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter at the Awesome Pod. You never know. We've started doing polls these days, so who knows what might turn up. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/awesomecomicspodcast, where we post up the latest news, who the next guest is, and what we might be talking about in the upcoming shows.
Yep.
Thank you for listening to us, whether it was on the website, awesomecomics.podbean.com. If you listen to us on iTunes, please leave us a review. Tell everyone you know about us. We hope you say listen to them, not you won't believe the shit that these idiots say. Yeah, and thanks and also thank you if you listen to us on Stitcher or on the Podnose network, which we're now part of now.
Cool.
So where can people catch us online, Tony?
On Twitter, Ezoyez. Ezohyz, and I'm at downthetubes.net. I've got three going up this week, I think. So
nice one.
Really interesting stuff, yeah. Including there'll be a review going up of Monologue 2, which will include some of the art, which is fantastic. So have a look at that.
Beautiful. Speaking of beautiful, where can they find you, Dan?
Twitter is @VanguardComic, and you can read Vanguard at vanguardcomic.com.
Which you should. Yeah. Now, you can follow me on Twitter at Jester Diablo. And if you want to know more about my comic, The Red Mask, go to theredmaskfrommars.com.
Looking good, man.
Thank you. Yeah. And the book.
Excellent. Bootleg copies available. Get
yeah. Like, yeah, Dan will print them off.
Shut up, Dan. Bastard. And you wonder why I'm mean to you. And where can they find you online, Shane?
I'm at Chebo and on Twitter, and also at Ice Comic Con. And I'm also on www.smallzone.co.uk.
Brilliant.
Brilliant.
So there you go. Another one in a can. This time from the other side of the convention.
Yep.
Yeah, that's been really interesting.
Oh, my phone just wanted to say goodbye to everybody.
My break yeah. love beats make a hell of a fucking noise.
And what a way to go out. That's
yeah,
great.
Yeah. On that bombshell.
On that vibrating bombshell. Thank you all for listening this week, as always. And from Shane, Dan, Tony, the vibrating love beads, and myself, have a brilliant week. Go express yourselves and stay awesome. See ya.
See ya.
Take care. Bye.